No. You guys ready?
Do it.
Let me make sure my 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away.
We have got to, like, put that on a separate line.
150.
Why does it blow everybody away?
Oh, God, it was, like, so
loud. Last week it was really loud, man. It was distorting.
I don't know why it's so loud. I have the volume, like, less than halfway for that.
Yeah, well, I think there's a little bit of mismatching there, and it's just rather loud.
Hello?
Hello?
They're really low.
Yeah, now
you got to turn those guys back up.
I
got to
turn everything back up again.
Hold on a second, guys.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Tommy, can you hear me?
Tommy, can you hear me?
What?
How can he be saved?
Oh, man. That was a pretty bad movie.
Oh, no, I thought that movie was hilarious.
You're the pinball machine, so...
Yeah, what the frick's her name? Rolling around in the baked beans. Yeah, rolling around in the baked beans on the white carpet. Yeah,
even though she was a little past her prime, she's still pretty hot.
Oh, she was hot in that movie, I thought.
Yeah, she was smoking, when she was younger.
Can I get something from Link? Hello, Link.
Sounds personal.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello.
Why are they so low now?
Dan?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the heck happened that they're so low.
Dan is ruining the show.
I'm destroying everything.
Broke it again.
Well, now they're okay.
Yeah, they're okay now.
Well, just because I'm just turning up the...
What about Kelm?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
He sounds fine. This is good.
All right. Kelm,
why is it that we have to start every show out with "Can you hear me now"?
We're a division of Verizon.
Because when I switch over to play the audio file,
it's like a friggin' Verizon commercial, man.
All right, Kelm sent me an email today asking to come on because he's got a really important topic to talk about, and it's a topic I think that is relevant to every one of us, and it's a topic that has come up on every single show I think for the past month and a half. And
tampons.
What's that? What'd you say?
I'm tired of it. I said
you're tired of our negativity.
Listen to you guys complain about it. Yes.
All right. Go ahead. This is a dissenting opinion to all of us, and a valid one. I would hopefully assume.
Really?
But go ahead,
cool.
Kellen.
Hopefully so.
Go ahead.
All right.
Experts exchange. You might remember it, but remember how to get there. It's called Expert Sex Change, but it's better if you pronounce Expert Sex Change. You guys keep complaining about it keeps popping up, and you can't get the answer off of there. You call yourself geeks. Let me explain how Expert Exchange works real quick here. Expert Exchange is basically a normal forum, except for people that answer questions get points for answering them. If whoever asks the question gives up points to the other people who are answering, who answer the question. If you don't receive an acceptable answer, then the points are refunded to you. You don't give the points out. In order to be part of Experts Exchange, you can either do a subscription to it, for like $10 a month or $99 a year. Well, so that allows you to search your knowledge base, and you get unlimited points if you pay them. But you don't have to pay them in order to log into their site and view other people's answers. The pay-in and the point system is only if you want to ask questions. So anybody can get a login there, no money, log in and view other people's answers and questions. But if you want to ask questions, so you got to subscribe, or you've got to start getting on there and answering other people's questions and earning points yourself. So I find high quality answers. You say yourself when you search on Google for some error log or something, you always get XExchange up toward the top there, and it's a reason. They typically got pretty good answers on there from everything from Microsoft Exchange to Linux questions.
Dan, you were the one who had the hard-on from Experts Exchange. What do you say?
What do I say? Do you know what? It probably comes down to the fact that I never took the time to read the fine print. I just looked and I saw...
Typical for you. Yeah. You never read the instructions.
It's
not real clear on the website.
I mean, I was under the impression that it was a pay service. And I know that sometimes I'll pull up a... get onto an Experts Exchange after a Google search, and it'll have the question, but it says you need to log in to see the answer. And other times, it'll have the question, and if you go all the way down to the bottom, you'll see the answer. So, you know, when I looked at the login part and I saw something about, $10 to subscribe, and I kind of equated it to something like drivers.com, where if you wanted to get drivers off of drivers.com, you got to pay like a subscription fee to some of those sites. And I'm like, to hell with that. I just want a stinking driver. I'll find it somewhere else. So, that's just my ignorance of not exploring it further. And after going through it,
I was the same way whenever I first seen it, too. On there. But I had another guy who checked it out, and he said, oh, this is cool. And we actually had our company, paid $100 a year so we could ask all sorts of questions on there, and we could give points out to people. And it is very helpful. Programming to regular questions and have your troubleshooting.
So, in your opinion, it's been a very helpful site, then, Dennis?
It's very helpful. Yeah, I'm just on board now, and I've been kind of regretting I haven't talked him into getting a subscription to it yet. But it's been very helpful.
Well, I'm probably just going to have to give it an honest look. I mean, a second look. Actually, an honest first look, I guess, at this point. Instead of just...
But next time you're searching, for, thing out of a line out of an error log, or something, you're searching the web for it, you need to go, when it pops up, just go sign up for an account. It doesn't cost a thing, because they want people like us to get on there and answer questions. That's what they're really wanting to encourage.
So why do you have to sign up for an account to answer questions then? That's what I want to know.
Because
I'm still going to be the bone of contention here in the whole thing, because I think it's a poorly designed thing. If you want people to answer questions on your forum and you want to be a popular forum, requiring that you either pay to get in there or sign up for this thing and then not make it, not make it readily apparent that it's not going to cost you money is a poor web design.
They don't make it very obvious, right. They don't make it very, very, very obvious like they should.
If it's not obvious, for years I've been looking at it and going, it's been a huge nuisance because, if I'm a search engine and I'm looking for the answer to a question, every time I, click on something, it ends up being an Experts Exchange link, and they want me to, either, like you said, they want money out of you, or they want you to sign up, or whatever it happens to be. That's still like a waste of time when you're looking for a quick answer, unless you already have an account there, I'm sure. But if they don't make it clear, then, how are you supposed to know?
Yeah, they should make it much more clear on their front page there. I didn't know either whenever I was first to come out and introduce me to it. Kind of on word of mouth is what they're going off of, I guess, because it's not very apparent.
Word of mouth for a website. There you go.
Now,
I think they'd have better than that because they got high Google rankings, obviously.
Yeah, right.
Since you are a subscriber, do you also answer questions?
Actually, I'm currently not a subscriber. When I was a subscriber, my company paid money. I actually haven't answered any questions on there yet. Every time I think about going there, I'm always looking for an answer and working on some sort of problem. So I don't. But supposedly they have like 150,000 different experts that answer questions on there. I can't, disprove or prove that, but that's the say.
So then, you haven't. So then, this point system. As a person gets points based upon the answers they give, is there a compensation for those points, did you say, or?
No compensation, but you get to ask your own questions to your higher experts, I guess. are experts in other fields, but you're an expert in one field, but you may not be an expert in another field. So you can take those points and assign a point value whenever you answer. When you ask a question, you say, this question is worth 50 points. I think up to 500, I believe, and then how important it is to you. And obviously, the more point value is, the more people, quicker people, they're competing to answer your question. They want to get those points so they can have those for rank and for being the top test. A lot of them probably do it to stay on top of the rank list. So those ranks, the top test on there.
All right. So I wonder if you're slick enough, could you beat the system by saying, getting one of your friends on there and you post a question like, how do I format a hard drive worth 10,000 points? And your friend logs in and answers the question and you award it to him. I guess they have mechanisms in place to prevent that from happening, yes?
Well, but the only way you can do that is if you're, you had to get those points somehow. You had to either pay for those points by subscribing, or you had to earn them yourself.
Oh.
Earn them yourself and waste them on your friend. And if you got your subscription already, who the heck cares? You got unlimited points.
Ah, okay, I get it.
So you're not going to game it, too much. There's not much gaming to do it. The biggest gaming I see is the fact that you want a subscription so you can search the knowledge base. Well, as we see, Google does a very good job of searching that for us.
There you go.
So why do we need their search tool for?
I get it now. All right. Makes sense to me. Does it make sense to you there, Pat?
I think we've talked about this enough. Being this.
This be the last show, finally, huh?
Next week we'll have somebody call in and have a dissenting opinion about Experts Exchange, and then we'll just go back and forth.
You're gonna have to start the Expert Exchange podcast, Dan.
There we go.
We'll call the Flame War Expert Exchange Flame War on podcast. Man.
Well, I thank you for clearing some of that stuff up. And indicating Alan's ignorance on the topic. That's always important.
It's all Alan's fault, man. He's telling us lies after lie.
He's our research assistant, and he has failed once again to inform us correctly.
I'm sorry.
I heard him.
Yeah, a little less Tim McGraw and a little more research, please.
just can the Tim McGraw
shit. Listen to this excuse. It's, oh, well, tonight's the first night I've ever been on Experts Exchange. I don't know.
No, actually, it is. I've never really bothered with it. I have seen it come up in questions when I Google stuff.
He's been hanging around the Timmy Touchers IRC.
Fuck you.
So who are you guys using to get out on your asterisk box? Are you using a provider to dial regular numbers, or are you just doing a...
We actually are our own phone company.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, we use Broad Voice. Pat subscribed
to Broad Voice.
Yeah, through Broad Voice. Pat,
no,
you want
to... No, I remember right? Is that when he paid the monthly fee?
Yeah, there's a monthly fee. It's cheap.
Stop it. If you're going to voice over IP, you can't pay a monthly fee. It's just wrong.
Well, can you get a phone number, a real phone number that people can call for nothing? Legally?
For nothing. Yes, actually you can, yes.
Legally?
Yes, I had one for one time current provider. You can go to, if you have a SIP number right now, you can go to, I get the website, I get you the address. Sorry, I don't have it on hand.
Put on the
you
RC.
You get a number out of Washington. I'm on the RC.
He's not prepared? The hell is it with these guests that aren't prepared with their
fits
URLs and
fits
stuff?
Fits right in, man.
Welcome to the show.
Now, does that
I'm actually a client working on Curb, so I can't get to the IRC, unfortunately.
Does this service give you unlimited calling throughout the United States to landlines?
Well, let's talk about two different services that I've used.
Okay.
The first one, SIPphone.com, by... Michael Robertson started that one. It's a gizmo product. It's a product is along with it. But you don't have to do that. Before there was gizmo, there was still had SIP phone where you could use an asterisk box or just some other phone voice over IP device. And you could connect and you could dial. You go SIP to SIP. You guys know familiar with that for free. But they also have where you can dial out the regular numbers at 1 cent a minute with no monthly fees. And then you can get a phone number through them If you want, you can pay for one, a monthly fee. But I am so against monthly fee that I don't like it at all. You can, if you have a SIP number, there's a couple companies. I know there's one in Washington, and I believe I see one in New York here recently, where they will give you a regular phone number and forward it to your SIP number for free. They have a bunch of extra ones, and they're just
it's like a web redirect kind of deal. Like if you have like a dynamic IP address and you want to have a static IP.
It's kind of like that, but they'll take your SIP. You know, they'll take a regular number and they'll just forward it. They'll terminate it at the PTSN, and that's right. And forward it to your SIP number. You know, they'll take care of that.
Terminated.
So how do they make money off of that?
No, they're just, I think there's a regular voiceover IP company up in the area, and they happen to have a bunch of phone numbers, and they're just trying to get goodwill to the community, because they're not making money off of that, they're making money off of other things, I believe. I'm not confident of that. Now, the SIP phone, I liked it okay, but the call quality, minor issues with it, it worked, but it wasn't, I thought it could get better. And I tried out a service called Teliax. That's www.teliax.com. And they have, bar none, the best call quality over any voice over IP service I've tried.
You can't get incoming calls that way.
That they do what?
You can't get incoming calls
that way, right? That's an outgoing service.
So with Teliax, if you want to only make outgoing calls, it is 2 cents a minute to make outgoing calls. No monthly fees if you only make outgoing calls. If you want to get a phone number with Teliax, it is $4.99 a month. And if you can get a local one, great. If not, the same in price, you can get a 800 number. You get an 800 number for about $5 a month, pay for that, and then for any calls make, they're 2 cents. 2 cents a minute outgoing. I think you pay 3 cents a minute if they're calling you. But for no monthly fees, I mean, you do the math. How many minutes can you talk at even $20 a month at 2 cents a minute?
I think that's what we're paying, about $20 a month. Minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we have unlimited in or out. Actually, yeah.
Yeah, but and that, technically the unlimited is actually probably soft capped, where it's not truly unlimited anyways. It's probably soft capped at about 1,500 minutes. Most voice over.
We haven't hit the limit yet. A lot of times our guests want to call in themselves because they don't want us harassing them after the show.
You could give them an 800 number and let the guest call that in and call right into your ass.
Well, check it out, man. I don't have a problem switching.
Can you send us those links in an email of the sites you're talking about?
Yeah, I can send you the Teliax and I'll find if you want the free number. You'll have to go with SIP phone, because Teliax is a little bit, they're not quite as open, and they don't allow SIP.
We don't mind paying some money if the quality is good and we actually get a real phone number.
That's my deal, too. I gave up the free one because the quality has just been awesome. I really, really like the quality.
We should clarify that last statement. Pat doesn't mind paying for it if the quality is good.
Yeah, I'm paying for the account. That's why Dan lets me in the door. Otherwise, he'd slam the door in my face.
Dude, I would shoot you when you got on the porch. There's a gun out there.
I also bring beer all the time, too.
Ceiling mounted. That it's got it targets you right when you're coming in, and it dials out to
detector.
The broad voice. Red dot has always been on my head. Huh?
It dials out the broad voice to make sure the statement's paid. Because if not,
how do you detect if I have beers or not?
Doesn't matter. They shoot you, and then we have a little robot that sniffs.
You know what,
beer,
though? Speaking of broad voice, I found that their service has been pretty well again since since I looked up and fixed their problem with their server in New York.
Pass me a Boddington, Alan. Dan Boddington?
Yeah, I'll take a Boddington.
Please pass it Boddington.
Link Boddington? Kellen Boddington?
Sure, Boddington.
Alan, if you want to help
yourself. Sure, why not?
It's a virtual Boddington. Whoa!
Gurgle, gurgle, gurgle.
It's okay, he's replacing the carpets.
Yeah, but it got on my chair.
All over my server.
Stop
it.
I'm actually going to try this.
Boddington, good.
The hell's like bouncing around in it.
It's a CL2 cartridge.
Yeah, it's a little ball.
Beer.
It's a little BB. If you hold it over your eye, it'll shoot your eye out. Sorry, go ahead.
Have you guys used Free and X?
Trying to think if I tried that. I think I tried that a while ago. Was that the one where they...
What'd you think of?
Was that the one with the free IAX account?
I'm talking about... I switched gears. I'm talking... Oh. Everybody's done remotely run X programs, right? Or remotely run...
Okay,
X
yeah, I know what you're computer, talking right? about, yeah. It's supposed...
Have you ever tried... Go ahead.
It's supposed to have better compression than VNC and everything, and more security. And
it is awesome. They have a test server you can connect to in like Italy, and I thought I was just across the room. It was truly awesome connected to a gnome box.
This is so good, man. Boddington's is so delicious.
The nice to change the subject and railroad right over top of our
guest. It's beer, man. It takes precedence.
I have been meaning to play around with FreeNX for a while. I never sat down and started implementing it.
I use it at my house because I have some old laptops, Pentium 133s and so forth. But I can use those to FreeNX to one of my other computers and... I just do regular school, but FreeNX is just somewhat better. It is unbelievable to see difference on that. I really think I'm working right on that.
Now, is that a cross client kind of thing? Like, can you connect from FreeNX to a VNC server, perhaps?
It does have some capabilities for that, and even RDP. But it's best to go from a client like Windows or Mac OS or Linux to a Linux server is the best. But you can put a Linux server on your network running FreeNX, and you can have it forward those requests to a local RDP server or VNC server in your own LAN.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about FreeNX. It's just that... I just haven't sat down to play with it.
You need to get some guys on the show talking about that, because you try that out, and they have a demo server, a couple of them, a demo workstation that you can connect to, and I think the one's in Italy and one's in Germany, I think, and the speed just connecting those was just phenomenal. I couldn't believe how fast it was. You hover over, the toolbar or the taskbar in the bottom, and you can see it changes like almost instantly as you hover your mouse over, the icons start changing. And that's a full-blown GNOME or KDE desktop is pretty awesome that way.
I check that out when I am in my new place and have a new job.
We're moving in.
What?
We're going to come down and we're going to crash in your place.
What's that? What's that, Kellen?
Are you leaving the school or are you just hypothetically just...
No, I'm leaving the entire area, school and everything.
Where are you going?
Virginia. Hampton Roads area, baby. Virginia
How
Beach.
How can you leave the show?
I'm not leaving the show. I'm just leaving the area. I can't stand Pat anymore.
You'll always be out of the, remoting in, huh?
That's it. The show will go on.
Actually, I think most of the show will be remoting into Dan.
Yeah, that's still up for debate.
It'll be something. We haven't figured it all out completely yet, but it'll be something.
What kind of job you got?
I don't have a job yet.
Dan's going to be standing out on the beach, will coat for food.
He's going to be leeching off his wife.
What kind of job his wife got? Must have a good job on there then, huh?
She got transferred. The option to transfer, and we've been kind of on the fence as to what to do, and she's got a pretty good job, and they're giving her a lot more responsibilities now. They're flying her out to Oregon for 4 weeks of training, not 4 weeks, 4 days of training to have her...
Portland, or?
Yeah, Portland, Oregon. To,
nice. That's supposed to be
a
nice city.
Take over a restructuring, I don't know, something. She's all excited about it. I said, so long as it doesn't interfere with you coming home on the weekends, because I need my something.
So that's why she's not coming home on the weekends right now.
Yeah, no, I need I'm so sick of painting and packing and taking care of the kids and everything that she's got to come home on the weekends.
Dane's going to explode.
Yeah. But no, I don't have a job lined up yet. I just put together my resume, and she's looking over it, and we'll be shipping it out this next week. And that's that.
So when is that?
What?
When is that scheduled basically for?
When he sells his house.
When is what scheduled?
Your move.
I don't know.
Got to sell his house first.
Got to sell my house first. But all this shit, except right, for my computers, is going to be out of here.
I just installed that FreeNX thing. How the hell do you get it to work?
Oh, look at this.
throw me a clue bone.
You installed the client on your computer?
I installed the client and server, yep.
Did you do Pac-Man SY FreeNX? Pull it down off the extra.
Yeah, man.
There you go.
I know.
Well, if you got the server running on your computer, have someone else try to connect to your IP. Of your laptop.
But then you're going to have to punch a hole through the firewall if you want one of us to connect to it.
Oh, is he not right there?
No.
Is Link remote?
He's too good to be in the room with the rest of us.
He's got the HIV.
he's too good to be sweating with the rest of us.
You know what? I just installed... That's why, because I just installed the server, not the client.
Okay. Install a client. I know they have some servers you can connect to, said in Italy and Germany on the website. You can get some connections off of there and connect to them.
Link is just exhausted because he's been installing and setting up Arch and tweaking it.
it's not his Ubuntu. He's actually had to do some work.
He's starting a project. I saw on his blog post.
Yeah.
Easy Arch, man. Link, how's that going?
Oh, yeah?
It's up there and ready to get downloaded and tested.
Anybody respond to you?
Distro, huh? No, none at all.
No one responded to you?
I was going to respond, but then I said, anyway. I got other things I need to do first.
Did you post on the Arch
forums?
Well,
it sounds like a good idea.
So what's so easy about it?
It goes out, you're looking to do like kind of like Easy Ubuntu or Automatics, right? Where it goes out and sets up all your like DVD and codecs and all that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should post on the, you should go post on the Arch forum, man. You'll get some hits. People will respond to you.
That reminds me, Pat.
You think?
What's that?
Canonics.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even running Canonics. I still have it though. I use it every once in a blue moon for a live CD.
I actually run it. I love it. By the way, that's why I said that. But,
have they come out with a new version?
I run it
recently.
Do what now?
Do they have a new version out recently? I know Easter there was like some beta version. I think that was the last one I downloaded.
I don't remember what last version I tried. My workstation is actually just about crashed, my hard drive, so I'm probably going to be reinstalling here pretty quick. But I installed it back in around November, I think, and it worked, you know. And you know, a lot of distros just, you know, will work. When you go to try to add software that's not in their repositories, you know, they start breaking and whatnot. But Canonics, I hadn't had a problem with that at all, because with apt-get and Debian, you know, packages, it's just how does this stuff just work and not break on me, so... Been very happy with it.
Well, good for you, man.
Is that what you're running now?
I'm running Canonics, yeah. At my on both the laptop and desktop, actually.
Canonics is nice. It's nice KDE based Debian distro.
I'm not big on the GNOME. I don't know what it is about it.
Me either, man. I'm more of a KDE person.
I always thought KDE was too pretty and girly, but you know, it just seems to be quicker to me. You know, I just like
to
feel a little bit more. Maybe I'm
pretty
angry, really, huh?
Getting a little bit of static. Hey, Dan, it's 9 o'clock.
Oh yeah, we gotta hang up there, Kellen. I want to thank you for coming on. Maybe we can touch base with you again in the future.
All right. Well, pleasure talking to you guys.
Thanks for setting Dan straight about Expert Exchange. We appreciate
yeah.
it.
Good
Thanks
talking.
There's egg. There's egg on my face.
Among other things.
Have a good one, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And Link, I guess I gotta hang up with you because we gotta switch over to the other system.
Go on Skype. Yep. All right.
All right. Bye.
Please stand by.
So, Alan, how you liking your how many Macs do you actually own now?
He's a Mac man.
One.
Woo, Alan.
That actually work?
Yes. That you actually use regularly.
I'll use regularly one, which is the Mini.
The Mini?
On it. But I also own an old iMac, two SE30s.
Are you using those for like specific things, or you just have them to have them around?
The SE30s to have around. I always
you don't have any
one.
Like services running on them or anything?
No. I always wanted one, and then I fell into two of them, so I had to take them.
You know, that old crusty Mac laptop that Dan gave me, I was able to, I tried doing Zubuntu and it bombed. But I was able to do the install for Debian. Just a vanilla Debian install. It looks like it installed everything, but I don't know how to get the boot manager set up now.
So it boots into it. Yeah, I don't remember. It's been so long since I did that.
I got the Bootix installed so that I was able to do the install just to fire it up so that it goes into the installer. And that worked.
There was instructions for that on the Debian site.
I got to check it out, man.
On it. It sort of looked convoluted. You sort of have to search for the stuff. It's not like it doesn't come out and say this is what you have to do.
Do you need to create like a boot disk or something?
No. As long as you have a Mac partition on there. On it, you know, the Bootix installs in there, and then it just runs automatically. But I can't remember exactly what you do to get it to come up.
Okay.
On off, you know, it's been so long since I did that.
Eh, we might have to get together. I don't know what Link has done. We'll ask him later if he's had any success.
That one I got from Dan is like
Zubuntu completely bombed out. I haven't tried a vanilla Ubuntu. I should probably try that.
You just have to go with like a basic on those guys. They run really good.
Once you get it on there.
Yeah, I've got the, 3400 or 6400. So it's an old one. And that has Debian on there. It's an old version and everything, but it actually runs. You know, it's not a speed demon, but if you needed to get something done, it would actually work.
The Debian for PPC that I was able to install, it has a 2.6 kernel on it, so it's pretty modern.
I did this like 5 years ago, so. so it's
ancient history, in other words.
Well, it's ancient history, but I'm sure, you know, since it's Debian, you know, it's almost current.
Right.
Actually, no.
They're coming out with a new version, I think, November, they said.
Well, that's fine.
Debian's stable?
Yeah. I never had any problem with Debian, except when it wanted
to. I like Debian, man. I think it's solid, man.
When apt-get wanted to go through one of his things where it wants to update everything, and then it tends to screw up everything that I had running.
You know, the only time I've had problems with anything with Debian is if you're pointing to unstable. If you're running off stable, like my server, man, no problem.
Well,
man,
yeah,
zero.
Stable, but then, you know, you're running software from 2 years ago.
But this is my server, you know.
Yeah.
The security,
that's what you want.
Updates and the patches are all up to date, though.
Well, that's what you want.
Yeah.
On it. But, you know, I was trying to run a desktop. And
right.
Running from like 2 years ago.
Yeah, running a desktop is not that great.
You there, Link?
In Debian stable.
Yeah, I'm here.
So, Link, have you had any luck installing Linux on that old crusty laptop that Dan gave us?
You know what? I haven't even tried yet.
I tried doing Zubuntu, and it completely bombed out completely. It died. But I was able to go into just a vanilla Debian install. It looked like it installed everything, but I don't know what to do now so that I can boot into the install now.
You have to go into your... What bootloader did you put in there? Bootix or something?
Yeah, Bootix.
So you boot up into the Mac OS, and you go into Bootix, and you reconfigure Bootix to point to the root partition.
Maybe instead of the kernel. Maybe we should get together and swap notes.
Yeah.
But Debian vanilla went on without a problem, man. It installed everything.
Nifty.
But Zubuntu, man. Bombed out, man. No good.
Nothing, huh?
Yeah, it looked real bad. Like, when you go into Bootix the first time and try to fire up the install CD, you got to tell it not to use the video driver.
Otherwise, it's got to use frame buffer.
Otherwise, it goes apeshit, yeah.
Yeah. I got to ask a question here.
Go ahead, man.
This drives me absolutely friggin' nuts.
I'm nuts.
How the hell does Skype arrange itself?
No idea.
Because, like, it's not alphabetical order in my contact list.
What is the last one added?
I don't know. No, it's not FIFO, the last one added either.
FIFO listing?
I don't know. No, it's not. I don't know.
It's one listing after another.
I add somebody, and now I can't find them.
You got a lot of people on that list, man.
Yeah,
well,
I do.
It's like a search, isn't there? There's like a search on there.
You got those guys on there?
I added them, but now I can't find them.
Just look at the email. You want to know what the
oh, there it is.
Oh, you found it?
He's listing us offline.
Oh, it lists everybody offline.
I know. I don't know why.
The Linux version does that. Everybody is offline.
The Mac isn't like that?
On it. The Mac isn't like that unless you're coming from a Linux, you know, a Linux box, and then you're always listed offline.
What was that kid's
name?
Even
when I'm online talking with you guys, it's still listed as offline.
Wonder what ever happened to Matthew Bischoff.
Good question. I think he was going to high school.
Sorry, he turned 14.
He was going to high school, I think.
Oh, there he is.
It's been like preparatory school, I think.
Yeah, Philly, right?
Oh, somebody's having
it.
Something like that. Let me see if we can get this guy.
Dan, you got to go beat your kids, man.
I know. Oh, crap. I found him, but now I lost him again. This is ridiculous.
Dan, you're killing the show.
They're going to be like, we're going to get hate mails. What, you guys call yourself experts?
Speaking of hate mails, man, we're going to talk to those guys, man, about the hate mail. Some of the hate mail they've gotten.
Who? These guys?
Oh, yeah.
I don't see why they've
you listened to the last episode of their show?
Which one?
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey. How are you today?
Look, hello.
Even over the Skype call, they sound a hell of a lot better than we do.
Dan, this was because you were retarded.
You sound okay?
You sound fine.
Hey, you sound great.
We were doing the Skype test just before this, and we sounded horrible. We were fretting about it for about a half hour.
No, you sound beautiful now.
Fantastic.
We got Chris and Brian from the Linux Action Show. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us, man.
We really like your show, man. It's cool.
Well, thanks. We've only been doing it for a couple of weeks now, so we're still the new kids on the block.
Yeah,
now,
it's definitely a learning process.
Now, you guys had a Mac show before this, right?
Yeah.
How many episodes
break right into that one.
How many episodes did you have of that?
Well, that's kind of interesting because the other show, we actually still do it, but it's not a Mac show anymore. We had a site and we had a show. We had a show called Cast Blasta, and we just kind of turned that into a tech variety show. And we've done like 27 episodes of that show.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then we have a website called Res Excellence.
Yeah, we saw that. Everyone is aware. You guys have become like instant celebrities today, the last couple days.
We figured a few people would be interested and we could maybe swap some stories. We didn't really quite expect the immense late night of comment moderation that we'd had behind us. So
yeah, it's been a long day.
So you guys have been feeling the hate.
you could say that.
We've gotten a lot of hate, and we've also gotten some positive stuff. You know, I got a surprising amount of comments and emails from people that have also switched.
Really?
Yeah, I have as well. I actually got a comment and an email from a guy who ran two of their largest Mac websites a few years ago, and actually now works for Canonical on the Ubuntu team. So that was kind of interesting in and of itself.
So you guys are Ubuntu diehards now?
I wouldn't call us diehards.
Yeah, Brian and I kind of call ourselves OS whores, but it's mostly SLED. SUSE Enterprise Linux and Ubuntu for us.
How you liking SLED?
With a dash of Fedora.
Do not say the SLED word in this room
SLED?
Because there's a guy on our IRC who will just blow his load over that. Because he is we already have a SLED whore.
The distro that will go unnamed. It's okay. It's good. It's solid, but it's just not quite enough to get us to stop using the free stuff.
Exactly.
Like, I have SUSE 10.1 running on my main workstation. I like it pretty much.
Yeah.
It's really not bad.
It's real nice. Once you use, like, Pac-Man, you know, for your package updates and...
Yeah, basically, once you swap out the package manager, it's a lot better.
Oh, yeah. It's usable then.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the things that we found pretty interesting is a lot of people think Brian and I are brand new to Linux. And really, I mean, on the server side, I've used Linux probably for the last 4 or 5 years now. So we're not new to Linux. It's just desktop-wise, we've always been OS X oriented, and we're just making the desktop switch now. But a lot of the comments we got were like, hey, welcome to Linux, like it was our first time. And so we kind of got a bad rap for that. Yeah. We're not really noobs.
Yeah. Well, for people who haven't listened, I listened to your last episode this morning, and basically you guys talked about why you've gone Linux.
Yeah.
I mean, can you give us the short answer if anybody wants to hear the long version? They can download the last episode.
It's up to you.
No. That, you know, just
here's the in the nutshell version. So there are many people out there who have written, you know, why I switched from Mac OS X to Ubuntu or to insert your favorite Linux distro here. And they give lots of good technical reasons, and I'm sure Chris is going to jump in on those in just a minute. But we have all those technical reasons, and we agree with them, and we can go into detail. But we also had the impression. I ran a Mac software company where we made Macintosh utilities, and Chris and I ran a Macintosh community website. And so we got to know the Mac community really well. And once you added up all of the technical problems and then all the problems with Apple's business strategies that bothered us, on top of the horrible Mac community that was just essentially this evil mob of molasses that just really hated us for some reason, it was time to move on to pastures that where the people weren't so mean, basically, where they welcomed us with open arms and flowers.
It seems everybody's focusing on the whole community aspect, and that was just the tipping point. There was a lot of other things that built up, right, up to that point.
Exactly. I mean, for me, as I make my living making Mac software, at least up until a few days ago, and my biggest problem was Apple has a tendency of copying,
stealing
shareware applications. Stealing is a good way to put it. Some people might say stealing. Apple would say effectively borrowing.
Improving.
improving, right. Making it cheaper for other people. But basically putting shareware companies like mine out of business. And I've seen a lot of my friends come and go over the years because of that. And I know that it's coming in my particular business, and that kind of scared the bejesus out of me. So I hit a point where I'm like, okay, so I'm sitting on this platform, I'm writing a Macintosh software, but I can't do it for much longer. And even if I come up with brand new applications that Apple hasn't stolen yet, you know, who knows how long I have before they go ahead and steal those new applications.
Yeah, and, you know, actually one of the things people said is when Apple copies your application, they're just challenging you to improve and make a better app. But that's actually not really true because, like in the case of Confabulator, if it's just a simple widget, well, if Apple provides you a free, good enough alternative, 99% of the people aren't going to use the pay version because they have a good enough solution.
Right.
So that's really kind of a BS excuse that, oh, Apple just challenges you to make better software. You know what? I thought that was true, but it's not the case.
So
exactly.
If the writing's on the wall, where does that leave you to go?
Well, that's what I had to figure out. I mean, my two choices at that point were either, A, I go to Windows.
No way, man.
And that just wasn't going to happen. I mean, I worked at Microsoft, forgive me, for quite a few years of my professional life.
And that ruined evil!
And if it helps any, I was actually working on mostly Macintosh products while I was at Microsoft.
Yeah.
And a few Solaris products as well. And the fabled Windows Media Player for Linux, which existed more than some people think.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
Are those guys actually running a version of Linux over there?
They run a lot. I got to tour their Linux lab. And they run every distribution, and they run many BSDs too in a lab where they test their products against it. They are actually very interested in where Linux has a leg up, and they are actively working to compete in that area.
Right,
so basically, they stole the TCP/IP stack, and now they're looking to steal something else.
Oh, they'll take what they can.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, though, about Microsoft is they don't like to recreate things. They don't like to work to steal. They want to just buy it. So if they can, they'll go to a software company and say, hey, we'll buy it for $1 million. If the software company says no, then Microsoft will steal it by recreating it.
Yeah, then they give them hell.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're a little better than Apple in that respect, then.
It's, you know, you
slightly pays the bills, yeah.
But, yeah, if you're in business and trying to pay your mortgage and put food on the table and keep your dogs out of the veterinarian hospital, then yeah, you know, it's mm-hmm. better. So for me, I wasn't going to go to Windows, and you know, the Linux community has always been open. Whenever I've had trouble, I could always go to, say, the Ubuntu forums and whatnot, and find a relatively open community and a platform that I actually enjoyed using. And I decided, well, you know, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to switch over to the Linux side of things in general, not just one particular distribution, and bring my software company with me.
Now, not to spoil the parade, there are assholes in the Linux community too.
there's assholes everywhere. But it is a very different mindset. And we've been talking with a lot of people about this over the last 24 hours. And it is a very different mindset. Sure, there's assholes. Sure, there's people on the Linux side, just as there are using NEOS, who are going to disagree with us, and plenty who are going to call us names, especially as I'm looking to make money making software for Linux. I'm sure there are several people that will take exception to that as well.
Yeah.
But just the same, so far, over the last several months of being a little more involved in the Linux community, it really hasn't been so bad. It's been much more opening, much more accepting, and people are much more helpful.
You know, I kind of equate it to this. In the Mac community, I think some people actually hate you. They actually passionately hate you. In the Linux community, generally at the end of the day, it's still somebody you could go have a beer with. You know, you might disagree with them on a few things. End of the day, though, you're both having the beer together. And it really, the Linux community is a lot more accepting in a lot more ways.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a big difference between
that
friend of yours who you smack upside the head and call a jerk, but then he's still your friend, or the guy that lives down the street who really is a jerk. I mean, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we know about the assholes, but we're prepared for that.
Now, you guys said you're gonna start developing software on Linux, right? Like, what are you looking to, what kind of products are you looking to make?
iTunes.
That is...
Give us a clue. iTunes, what's coming up, man?
iMovie.
Well, there's a couple of ideas. You know, honestly, for the iTunes and the iMovie side of things, there are some really cool open source projects that are young yet, but that are really... getting better. I mean, you've got the likes of Kino and whatnot for video editing under Linux, and they're getting better. They do have a ways to go. They're not really consumer.
They're not iMovie.
They're not
yet.
Bulletproof. They're not iMovie yet. But they'll get there. And I would really prefer to see those applications really solidify. And for me as a developer, my general goal is to be able to contribute to those projects, to see those projects come to fruition, while at the same time taking on the projects that either aren't being done or have stagnated or have open source counterparts that have stagnated to the point where someone who is making a living off of it has the resources to step in and create a version that is usable.
Yeah, and for sure there's a lot of good applications, but like Brian said, some of them have just kind of stopped. There's also some big holes out there that people don't even really pay a lot of attention to yet, but it's like once you get the iTunes program, it's that next program you're going to want, and that's, I think, kind of where... The it's going to be focused at.
Correct.
So you're looking to write the Quicken for Linux.
You know, at a certain point of view, yes. I mean, I'm not looking to write Quicken. I'm not overly interested in financial management, and if I get started writing a Quicken clone type thing for Linux, I'm going to get bored very quickly. But most of my work has been in multimedia. Most of my work has been, you know, very consumer-centric, you know, nice kind of slick UI-driven applications. And that's generally what I'm going to be targeting. I have a couple of ideas in mind, and over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to kind of do my public unveiling of what it is I'm working on, and we'll give you guys the inside scoop as we get closer to that.
Well, and what the tricky part is you got to figure out the right model, because the Linux audience is different than your typical desktop. You know, your OS X or your Windows, you got to figure out what's the right model for them. Is it like an open source proprietary hybrid? Is it an open source? You know, so there's and what licenses do you use? You know, so there's a lot of stuff to figure out.
Exactly.
You guys talked about on your last episode about, you know, how Mac users don't want to pay shit for anything once they've made that initial purchase 5 years ago. And then you talk about the Linux people who go out and buy software and they bitch about it. I mean, if we go around the room here, who among us has either bought software that runs on Linux, you know, with, you know, some kind of money value, or made a donation to a Linux distro? Dan, have you bought anything in the last year?
Yes, I have.
Alan?
I have bought games, and I also donated to a Linux distro.
No, actually not.
Suck, Alan.
I pay for Crossover, and I also donated to a Linux distribution.
Mm-hmm.
I've donated to the FSF, and I just bought Parallels too, which, by the way, is really great software. So
yeah, it is. It is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say I've bought Crossover, and I've donated it to the Mozilla Foundation. But like, if there was a killer app that really did something, if there was something I really wanted, I'd pay for it. Like, if it was something that just wasn't available on the Linux desktop, you could probably get my money. as long as it wasn't... Like Crossover, that's something I pay for. If there was an app that was compelling like Crossover...
And that is really part of the thing, is I think a lot of Linux users haven't necessarily paid for anything under Linux, but that's because very few developers are charging money for anything under Linux. And I think a lot of developers are scared to make the investment of time and energy to create really great, compelling applications for Linux and charge for them, even if it's, you know, charging for support or charging for a enhanced version or what have you. Many developers are afraid to do that and make that leap. Whereas, you know, I'm convinced the Linux community is fantastic. Everyone I've talked to, for the most part, has said, you know, yes, if you make XYZ, not only would I buy it, I would have to buy it because then it would be a must-have thing for my desktop. And, you know, it's doable. It's very doable. But some people are going to have to make the first steps. Some people are going to have to make that leap. And what the hell? I don't mind.
You know, you guys talk about multimedia. I mean, multimedia is one of the areas where Linux has been a little behind.
Right.
We've talked to Dan Dennedy, who's the main guy behind Kino, you know, the video editor.
Yeah.
And we've talked to the guys from Novell, and they talked about Diva, you know, the video editor.
Yep.
But that's like really ultra alpha right now. I mean, if someone...
Yeah, it is.
If someone,
it's like, was it 0.002?
Yeah, if someone came along with a video editor... That was similar to whatever the Apple product is. What is it? iMovie. That was easy to use.
The superior Apple product, please.
Most people would pay for it, I think. You know, $50 or whatever.
You're absolutely right. I think they really would. And I think there's a lot of applications that are like that that people could really get behind and get into. It's amazing. There's little applications on the Mac and Windows side. There's this application on the Mac side called Comic Life. All it does is let you easily make a kind of a cool-looking comic book.
That's a cool application.
It takes photos and makes a cool comic book. And I bought it, like, the day it came out. I'm like, I have to have this application. It's a niche of a niche of a niche. But it sells very well, and, you know, this is the sort of thing. If someone brought this over to Linux or something like it, and there's a million different uses for different apps like this, I really think that they could sell well.
But you know what? Here's my concern. With that concept of the Linux commercial Linux app, because it seems like we get two flavors. We get Diva or PityV, which is ultra, you know, alpha. Unless you're running, you know, super developmental libraries that aren't even included in most distributions, you're not going to be able to use these. You have Kino, which is pretty good, but can still use a little bit of work on the user interface to make it like iMovie. And then when you go on the commercial side. Like, the cheapest commercial application that looks pretty decent is Main Actor.
Yeah, and how much
is that
now?
$300. Main Actor is a
lot. It's a lot of money.
Right. So, I mean...
And Cinelera is a beast. I mean...
And my concern is...
if you can get it installed.
Yeah. My concern is you have the company that might want to develop the Linux-based application, but we don't need... You know, we need, like, an iMovie for the consumer use, not like a Maya.
Right.
You know,
right.
And something... And just like Demo Recorder. Looks really cool. But, you know, if you want to get the version that exports the video formats,
you're
dumping
pay more money.
Like $300-$400.
It's a lot of money. We're going to talk to that guy in a few weeks.
You guys are absolutely right. Yeah, you guys are absolutely right. Linux has been very interesting. I mean, you have the free side of things and the open source side of things, and then you've got this pro market where some people are using Linux for very pro media oriented tasks, and they spend a lot of money on their workstations. But there's no in the middle. There's no average Joe Schmo software that we need in order to make Linux. Essentially, I mean, really, to take Linux to that next step, to make Linux really viable for a lot more people.
Out of all the companies that are out there, it seems Novell seems to be making the most progress with that. They have a lot of relationships with ISVs, you know, independent companies that make software. They seem to, you know, since they've become, you know, a Linux company, they're pushing the ISVs to go with Linux now. I mean, it seems that a lot of the software that's being made by these people. It's mostly business-related software, but eventually the other stuff is going to come through. And people like you guys, you know, who are looking to make a consumer-grade application that's going to sell some, you know, you're going to charge for it. I don't mind paying for it as long as it, you know, fits a need and it's good quality software.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's the hope.
and I think there's also in the Linux side of things, there's a very underdog feel. There's a very community, small guy feel. I think, and I can speak for me, and I think a lot of my other friends that use Linux, if they think that they're supporting a mom-and-pop shop, one or two guys that are making their living making, you know, a couple of great pieces of software, instead of paying their money to a very large corporation, they're going to be a lot happier, you know, being able to support the little guys. And I think that that's
they'll have loyalty
a lot more often.
They'll be loyal,
right.
Hopefully.
Exactly.
So, are you still going to be writing apps for Mac, or are you going completely Linux?
Not really. We make one of the more popular CD burning software on the Macintosh side of the Macintosh side. And
what's that called?
It's called DiskBlaze. You can check it out at diskblaze.com. And we're going to bring a version over to Linux. I was kind of hesitant about doing that at first, simply because, you know, there aren't a lot of commercial software available for Linux, but one of them that is Nero's foray into the Linux side of things. And so, but, you know, we've already got a lot of experience on that side, so we're going to bring ours over as well, along with our other applications. But I wasn't going to say. Right, so the Macintosh version of DiskBlaze will probably still stay, but we're really, you know, kind of wrapping up development and kind of putting a lot of those applications into support mode, and we're getting rid of a lot of the other ones to other Mac developers to free up our time.
Now, on your last podcast, you guys have talked about some of the reasons which prompted you to switch. And you mostly talked about, you know, the user community and, you know, the demand for support for so many years after an application, you know, has been paid for. You slightly touched upon the technical aspects. What is it about OS X that's gone downhill lately? What sucks about it now? What's gone down?
You know, for me personally, it was one day I'm sitting there using my computer and I'm downloading Apple's updates through their update software, and I realize that I have like 10 gigs worth of photos, and they're all stored using this weird sorting format in this weird database in iPhoto. And I thought to myself, in 10 years, am I going to be able to get to this data? You know, because things like your pictures and your music, that's stuff you want to have like for as long as possible. And I thought, is this a viable long-term solution for me? Am I going to keep doing this? What happens if I stop using iPhoto or Apple makes some huge change that I have no control over? And then the same with their music library in iTunes and AAC-protected music. I thought, 5 years from now, am I going to be able to play AAC-protected music that I bought today? And then it just started adding up with me, and I realized, like, all these iTunes updates I was getting were just to, like, stop me from having fair use of my own music. And so there was that level of just, like, a personal distaste. But then we really have experienced some stability issues with their latest applications, specifically GarageBand. And this is one of the things we got a lot of flack for saying. But honestly, GarageBand was so bad, we actually lost an entire episode of Castablasta. And when iLife came out, the latest version, we said, all right, Apple says we can do podcasts in this. We're going to buy it, and we're going to do a podcast using only Apple software like Steve Jobs said we could. And you know what? It totally screwed us over. I mean, we lost one of our better episodes through it. And so there was the stability, and then there was the getting locked into proprietary file formats and not really having transparent views into the development process, because like Apple always likes to surprise you with their latest product, whereas like with F-Spot managing my photos, I can read the blog of the developer and I know what the future enhancements of F-Spot are, and for my personal records and data, that's important to me.
You can also get the developer on your show and talk to him.
Exactly. It's not a big secret. Exactly.
No. Exactly. Absolutely. You know, and it's funny. You know, I kept encountering so many problems with let's see, Apple's web browser Safari, with GarageBand, with iPhoto,
Mail,
with their Mail client, and even with their file browser Finder. I had so many problems. Before long, I wasn't using any of them. I had Firefox and
Thunderbird.
OpenOffice and Thunderbird, and I didn't even use their file browser. I used some shareware file browser called Pathfinder after a while. And so I realized that my desktop didn't even look like Mac OS X. It looked like a strange Linux-y-influenced Mac hybrid beast. And nothing really worked well together because I was trying to force, you know, applications that weren't meant to be there to work well with the OS, and it was a real nightmare scenario. And so I'm like, you know, if I'm going to use all of these applications that are open source and built first for Linux anyway, what the hell am I doing on OS X?
You know,
and then also you had a, Brian also had a lot from a developer standpoint of technical problems too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, where Apple would be changing APIs from release to release and just straight up breaking many of our applications. And under OS X, it's not like Linux. Under Linux, we can basically hard link to libraries and statically link them so that we can distribute custom versions of individual libraries with an app to maintain compatibility. Under OS X, they have a set of frameworks that essentially provide the same libraries, but you cannot redistribute custom versions of them. You have to use whatever version is on the system at the time. Apple controls that. If they break something in your app, you are just screwed.
So, end of story. So basically, they make it difficult for the developers to use the current version of the software because the APIs are constantly changing. And they also make it difficult for the end user because they want the end user to upgrade to the latest version of OS X.
That's actually pretty accurate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty good way to sum it up.
And if you're not a huge developer like Adobe and have a little weight with Apple, they just go off and completely break your stuff. And then to your customers, it looks like your app's broken. They don't care that it was something Apple changed. They just care that your software just broke on them.
Yeah, those are fun days. Those are fun days.
And then Apple users, being as pleasant as they are.
You know, first off, I want to make a few comments. Number one, I think the problem is with you guys, not with Apple, because Apple makes superior products.
Screw you, Dan. That's all.
Two, you
Apple apologist bastard.
You made a mistake by calling it my music. It's not your music. They're just letting you use
They're
it.
They're letting you use it, yeah.
Right. That's true. My mistake.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. And three, and this is, I think you started talking about this. As a developer, one of the things that we've heard repeatedly about problems in the open source community about developing for Linux is the constant the rate of change in the open source community is so rapid, and the lack of standardized APIs and everything, that rate of change is so rapid. Not being a developer myself, but having been on the Mac platform for the past 3-4 years now and watching what Apple has kind of adopted, a strategy that is, you know, on a closed commercial side, yet keeps almost the same pace as the open source community or tries to, that, you know, going from the various subversions of, like, Jaguar up through Panther and into Tiger, I've noticed that they've had some of the same issues that even some simple changes really break some serious applications. And it must be difficult
as
a developer to keep up with that, you know, that kind of pace with that Apple has been trying to adopt in keeping up with the open source community. So then that leads into the question is, where is the fault in this? Is that complaint that the keeping up with the pace of open source is too difficult for the commercial entities a valid excuse if Apple is adopting that kind of philosophy?
You know, it's so yes and no. The rapid pace of development on Linux is difficult if you look at it from the wrong point of view. On the Linux side, you are given enough flexibility as an application developer and distributor that you do not have to, in most cases, soft link against the libraries that are in use on a given user's system. For most cases, you can bundle custom versions of the libraries, which include all the technologies and the versions of those technologies that you expect for your version of application. So when the user uses your app, it will continue to work until you update it to use newer libraries. On the Mac OS X side of things, if Apple changes something, you're screwed. You can't ship new versions of the Apple frameworks or old versions of the frameworks, except for the .Mac framework, by the way. You're allowed to redistribute any version of the .Mac framework you want for free, but that's the only exception on the Mac side. And so, you know, there's nothing really you can do other than make a whole new version of your application that is built to use the changed APIs, the new APIs, work around the new problems, etc. And so, and the same is kind of true to a certain extent on Windows. If a new version of MFC or the .NET libraries come out and break your application.
Or a service pack.
Right. That's it. You have to make a new version. On Linux, you have more flexibility. And yes, it's more rapid, but it's only a problem if you come at it from the point of view of I'm a Windows or Mac OS X developer making apps for Linux, and not from the point of view of I'm making great Linux applications.
So then,
if that makes sense.
Essentially, what you're saying is If you're going to develop for Linux, get on the Linux bandwagon. But if you're going to develop for Windows or Mac. Now, but then if you are a Mac developer, but it sounds like Apple wants to jump on that kind of same type of Linux-y or open source bandwagon where they're keeping up with a rapid pace of development and expecting everybody else to roll along with them, all you developers. I mean, is it possible to have...
Right.
Do you think that those two... philosophies can combine and actually work together? Is there a middle ground?
No, there's really not. I mean, Apple is going to lose a great deal in this over time. It's not going to be immediate, but they are already starting to see it where certain developers are being unable to keep up. I have some applications that have been out for 4 or more years. And those applications came out when macOS 10.0 and 10.1 were first released. And since then, a lot of those apps have become irrelevant because of additions to the macOS itself. But there are still users of those applications. But since then, the APIs have changed and such that those applications don't necessarily even run on the newest OSs, but there are still users who want to maintain it. It's a very difficult conundrum.
Well, and one benefit with the open source model is because development is so transparent, as a software developer, you can track what's coming down the pipe. Whereas with Apple, it's just bam, all of a sudden there's an OS 10 update. Here's kind of a sketchy developer doc that might have some of the details you can follow, but generally not. So it's a lot easier to stay up to date because you basically can keep pace with the open source guys because they're not trying to hide the features from you.
And if I want to make a multimedia application and I want to base it off of something, say, like GStreamer, and I don't like, you know, a bug in GStreamer, I fix it or I help someone else fix it. Or I open up the source code and find a workaround. Those options are just simply not available elsewhere. So in those senses, the open source model benefits commercial software developers immensely.
Wait a minute. Did you just catch that? It almost sounded like during the whole time he's talking, like it almost sounded like it edited itself. And that he's saying one thing and then his voice kind of changed. But whatever was in between those two points he was trying to make. Did you catch that?
That's because
having these guys on our show.
I think I know what the problem is. We have very.
Are you guys saying we sound too professional?
I mean, you sound so fluent.
You guys,
good. It
you guys
flows.
Have that like that neutral sounding Northwest accent. Where you know I'm from New York, man. I have a New York accent. Dan's kind of got like that Pennsylvania drawl. You know, Alan has got that Jersey kind of sound to him. We sound very unprofessional, and you know. Disheveled.
Oh,
and
I think you guys love sound
mesmerized. See, there they go, leaving me out again. Bite mess, Pat, okay?
Out of us, Link's... Link's
freaking day.
Link has the most radio-sounding voice out of any of us. Because he sounds more neutral than any of us.
You know, also, you know what also helps is we got really expensive mics on sale. So that also
helps.
Yeah,
we did. We did get a good sell on nice mics.
Well, I finally bought a decent mic for once, so I sound a little better.
It makes a difference.
Rub it in, you bastard. You rub it in, and I'm using a $10 Walmart microphone.
I love Walmart.
That's funny.
Oh, man.
$10 microphone, but I'm tell you what, it's a $25 mic stand, damn it.
Yeah, it's a nice mic stand.
That makes all the difference.
Yeah.
I think we're putting the money in the wrong product.
Wait, when we start doing it from my house, you can use my other mic.
Hey, you know, just kind of a question for you guys. Do you guys record in OS X, or are you recording in Linux, or what?
All Linux, baby. All Linux all the time.
Are you? Good man.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you guys recording your show with?
You know, we started out with Audition, but by the second episode, we actually moved over to Audacity. So we said if we're going to do a Linux podcast, it's got to be all Linux.
That's right.
Absolutely. And you know what, actually, it turned out that some of the functions in Audacity made more sense to me. Like the normalize function in Adobe Audition, I couldn't figure it out. But in Audacity, it's just so simple. Plus, I have nice built-in encoding that does a really good job for both AUG and MP3.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're using Audacity and we're liking it.
We're using Audacity too for the live stream. We're using Dynabolic, and that comes with a whole bunch of different applications on there.
Wait, you guys have a live stream like that's going out right now?
Yeah,
that's what they do.
You didn't realize that?
You're live.
No, oh, man.
You're live on the air, man.
Get on the IRC, man.
You can't go back in and edit up all these these things I'm saying?
No.
No. Oh, geez.
Get on the IRC. Have you guys jumped in the IRC?
I need to put my politically correct hat on real quick.
No, not political correct.
Not on this show, you don't.
No.
Oh, thank God, because we use naughty words on our show.
That must push out some real bandwidth, though, doing it live. I've wondered about that with your show, how you do that exactly.
We have mirrors.
Bandwidth be damned.
Gotcha.
It's all good until the bills come in.
Hey, guys, got any other questions for us? Lay it on us. Dig deep.
Yeah, I have a question
for
you.
Tear us apart.
Let's switch to hardware here for a minute. I know we talked a lot about Apple software. I'm kind of hoping that in the next few weeks after I sell my house, I can convince my wife to let me buy a laptop. And I'm really kind of struggling here as to what to get. And I really, really, having played around with the MacBooks, I really like the MacBook.
Bastard.
The 13-inch version?
Yeah, the little white and black guys, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I mean, the mid-range
is
what I like.
I've got a little MacBook sitting in front of me right now, actually.
You know,
it depends on what you want to do with
it. Yeah.
So there are major bizarro limitations to this thing. For instance, you can't have more than 4 partitions?
Yeah, if you want to do Linux, and it does run on there. In fact, I have a guide on my blog on how to put Linux on there. But the thing about it is with OS X and it having kind of a funky partition support, and with the combination of Windows and Linux, you can only have 4 partitions on a MacBook. And one of those partitions has to be your OS X boot partition plus OS X. So you're down 2 partitions already. So if you want to triple boot Windows, Linux, and OS X, you don't get a swap partition, and you have to put everything on a root drive under Linux.
You know what? That's what must have been screwing me up. Because for the life of me, I could not. I had a dual boot in Ubuntu and OS X, and I couldn't get Windows to dual boot. But I had a separate swap partition.
Go check out bin-false.org.
Yeah, I put a guide on there.
There's a great guide up there that Chris put together that I use. I've used probably 5 times now as I've had to keep reinstalling my little MacBook here, and it's an okay machine. It is a little bit finicky still under the Linux side of things. Yeah. I mean, Compiz does work. In some builds of Compiz. Yeah.
You can use AIGLX and Compiz to get the cool effects. And you know what else is kind of buggy? Is the wireless is still a little buggy.
Yeah, the wireless
it's not
is still
100%.
A little buggy. And the keyboard and mouse emulation is still a little weird.
Oh, yeah, not having the right click. Sometimes there's a button that emulates the right click, and then sometimes it just doesn't work. It just depends on how it booted up. And every now and then when booting up, you'll get an ACPI error. These are all kernel things that they're working out, but it's still under a lot of development.
Yeah, so definitely if you're going the MacBook route, you know, definitely understand that you are getting it to use OS X plus either Windows or Linux, but not both.
Yeah, it's a big pain in the butt. And the video card works good for Quartz acceleration and AIGLX acceleration, and it works for even Vista's DirectX crap that they're doing. But the thing is that it does not play video games. I'm talking it doesn't play games that are like 2 years old.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
See, so it's a
now,
weird card.
I heard that the Linux distributions are working on an EFI bootloader that's going to let Linux be the only singular operating system on MacBooks and Intel iMacs and that kind
That would
of
be
stuff.
Great. Though, to be quite honest, I mean, the little MacBook is nice. It's a nice little machine. It's got a great little screen on it.
Yeah, the screen is really nice.
It's gorgeous. And it's a very well-constructed machine, but... I have one, and I'm kind of upset that I have it right now.
And I actually had one, too, and I got it through my work, and I gave it back, and I elected for an HP with the AMD 64 dual-core chip in it.
Good man. I'm like the anti-Apple person out of this group. I fucking hate Apple. To me, that pisses me off about Apple. They're worse than Microsoft in many respects. Microsoft controls all the software. Apple controls the hardware. They control
everything.
The digital media. You know,
we control the audio. We control the video.
I've gone into the Apple store and I looked at their machines. They're nice machines from an engineering standpoint. You know, real nice, you know. But they're such goddamn pricks. I can't stand them.
Elitists make you want them really bad until you've had them for a while.
And the other thing about the MacBook is it is built for OS X. It is a trick to get Linux on there. It's not impossible. I mean, we've done it a bunch of times. But the other thing, too, is the drivers, if you use Windows XP very much, the drivers that Apple ships for Windows XP when you use Boot Camp, they suck. Sleep is so buggy. I mean, they really cause some problems.
Yeah. I mean, using Windows on a laptop is not a dream scenario under any stretch of the imagination.
Guys, using Windows on any computer is not good.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, but
it doesn't make any difference whether it's a Mac or not.
The Apple drivers just make it worse.
They managed to take up the bad experience up a notch with on the MacBook.
Yeah, they really step it up. They bring their A game.
But if your primary OS is OS X, that's a solid machine.
Yeah,
and absolutely. It will boot into Linux. And I actually used it. I used Linux on there 95% of the time that I had the MacBook. And it worked okay. What I did find happening, though, is this is really weird, and other people have this problem, too. With the wireless, it would slowly ramp up and would think it was receiving a ton of incoming packets until eventually it would freeze the computer. And the way you could stop it is you could unload the kernel module and then reload the wireless kernel module, and it would reset. It would be okay. So it does have bugs.
Yes.
See, that's interesting, because I have a PowerBook right now, and I dual boot Ubuntu. I'm on Dapper and OS X, and I pretty much have no problems. And when I had the opportunity to test drive a MacBook for a few weeks, I was really excited to actually have... again, Ubuntu, Dapper, Drake on there dual booting, and to have such flexibility to be able to go in between OS X, to go into Dapper, to have flash support on an Apple system, and to be able to play just all the software I regularly use on Linux on the MacBook side, and then to use Parallels for Ubuntu and also Windows XP to play around with that. And I thought to myself, if I wanted to buy a system, and if I was buying a laptop, I'm looking for flexibility that I could run whatever I want to run. And one of the things that's hedging a MacBook out as opposed to anything else is the fact that, no matter what it comes down to, I can run OS X, but I could also run Linux, or if I absolutely need to, Windows, in any manner that I could possibly run. I'm not really necessarily looking to play high-end games, but I'm looking for that the capability to just like take this thing and go anywhere and do anything I pretty much want to do with it.
It's a good little box for that. And I got to imagine as the smart guys out there working on the kernel stuff, it's going to get better on the Linux side. I know it's actually one of the goals in Fedora Core 6 is to have specific Intel Mac support. It's one of their main goals for that release. So it's going to get better. So it's, it's definitely an option.
Yeah, so it's getting there.
Now, you guys are running Parallels. I've heard you talk about running Parallels.
Yep.
One of the things that, in my brief testing and playing around with Parallels, is running XP under Parallels, I never had a problem getting a network... an IP address, but when I ran Ubuntu under Parallels, for some reason it never wanted to initialize the network card, give itself an IP address, and I couldn't figure out why. I can run, after it was up and running, I could do the DHCP.
Were you on a laptop?
I was on the MacBook.
Okay, and you were under Linux using Parallels?
No, I was under OS X using OS X. Parallels to boot Ubuntu.
Parallels under OS X doesn't really support the wireless card very much. If your network connection on the host machine is your wireless card, Parallels has a lot of problems with that.
Yeah, it kind of sort of works.
Yeah, it works sometimes.
Yeah, it works sometimes.
That's a known issue, when they released version of that version, that was a known issue that they just decided wasn't a bug killer, or a release killer.
Because I thought it was kind of odd that no matter what, XP always seemed to have an IP address. But under Ubuntu, under Parallels, I'd have to manually fire that sucker
up. That was my experience. And to be honest with you, when I started using Linux as my desktop, because of that, because they have that same problem on the Linux version, because of that, I just thought, well, you know what? I'm going to try out VMware Server now that it's got the final release out. And I've actually been pretty happy with that, too.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Now, there was something else I wanted to say. And it's
you
been
said a naughty word, and you are live, my friend.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Ah, shit.
Alan's dropping the F-bomb.
We have adult content rating going on.
Sure. We really work on the explicit tags.
We've been sucking down Boddington's, man, so, like, the F-bombs are dropping like crazy.
So,
fantastic.
Speaking of Parallels, and I think it's really great, but Parallels has a serious problem under Linux running a kernel, what is it, 2.6.15 or greater? That, because I run Arch, and I'm on the bleeding edge of the kernel here.
Right.
And
right.
If I try and install Parallels on here, it gets into this vicious loop and sucks up all my system resources. And
you know, under Linux, I've only used, on Parallels, I've only used SUSE. So I've never tried Parallels on Ubuntu or Arch, because then by the time I started doing that, I just switched to VMware Server, which I liked VMware Server because it has snapshot capabilities, which was one area that I liked quite a bit.
Dan, I'm running Parallels right now on Ubuntu Dapper, running 2.6.15.26.
Or is it?
I didn't install it on there, but you know, I installed it on an earlier kernel, but it's running on this one.
Anything greater than 2.6.16 has problems with Parallels.
Is it 2.6.16?
Yeah.
Oh,
that is the bleeding edge.
Not really. No, SUSE comes with that, and
it is if you're running Slackware.
Slackware. Come on. And me, on the server side, I'm using Debian Stable, so...
Me too. Hey, Debian,
there you go, yeah.
Debian Stable is fantastic on the server, man.
There's
I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing wrong
no
with
problems,
that at all.
Man. Absolutely none.
I know, I love it. And it has always been rock solid, but it doesn't have the freshest package selection. It does have the backports, which comes in handy for some.
And they also keep up with the security updates as well.
Exactly.
My server right now is running kernel 2.4.2.2.
I worked at a school district a few years back, and I put a server in a long time ago, and I was just visiting them again on a contract job, and I came across a Debian server I put in that was running kernel 2.2 something.
Yeah.
They've never done it.
Still running, man. Still running.
You don't need to do an upgrade. If it does what you want, you don't need to upgrade it, right?
Sure.
That's what they figure, yeah.
You hear those stories.
Solid uptime on that thing.
You hear stories about machines behind walls and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear that about Linux and network, but you never hear that about Windows. Yeah, we found
out. Yeah,
nobody ever says I walled up my XP box and left it running and it ran for a whole week. You know,
my IIS server.
A whole week it ran for a whole day.
Solid.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no, I actually, my personal longest uptime was on a Novell NetWare 3.11 server with 524 days. And this was one busy box.
Yep.
So, yeah, the NetWare did have a solid stability, yeah.
Yeah.
NetWare, yay! Well, the NetWare's going away for Enterprise.
Hey, no, I prefer the Linux, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? I've ran SUSE Enterprise Linux too, and that's actually it's not bad. I actually still prefer Debian, but it's nice. It's got I don't know. It's got commercial support if you like that.
It's a little slow, but it comes with a lot of things out of the
right.
Game.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? Having run in a NetWare environment from 3 all the way up to 6.5 and playing around with Novell's open enterprise server and stuff, there's a problem that Novell hasn't rectified yet, and it's that transition from the current NetWare environment to their open enterprise server environment that they kind of pay they make it sound like it's an easy transition to go from Novell NetWare over to Novell NetWare on Linux. But you know, it's really, they still got a lot to work out yet, and there's some serious gaps.
I agree with that.
Which is unfortunate, because I was like all excited, and when I started playing around with it, I'm like, you know what? It's just on the cusp of being there. Maybe in another year or two, but right now it's just like there's just some really significant things that have not made that transition yet. That is going to make is going to finally, do it in.
You know what I will say is, in terms of SUSE Enterprise Linux, is the quality that they pile into this. I've said this on the Linux Action Show too. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, but I was a SUSE Enterprise server beta tester, and I must have been a beta tester for like, I don't know, like almost a year and a half, 2 years, and just constant bug fixes. One-on-one communication with every beta tester. They'd hold conference calls. They'd ask and they'd fix the smallest things. I mean, they were so serious about making sure they put out a solid, well-tested product. I really got to give them props on that. Novell put a lot of energy into making sure they put out a really stable software release.
Novell is a cool company, man. Those guys are doing all the right things. They're making the efforts in all the right places. I wish them all the luck, man, honestly.
But you I agree
with
you on
that.
I've
been pretty impressed.
But I hear, you know, outside the Linux community, outside the Novell community, you know, if you pick up a copy of Network World or Info World or anything like that, they're always, like, bashing Novell and saying, you know, is this dinosaur still, you know, lumbering around?
Well, they say that about mainframes, man. I work in a shop where mainframes do 90% of the freaking work, man. They're big monster systems that just pump out tons of data, you know?
Heck yeah. Every machine, and when you talk about like a banking place.
Exactly.
Banking is all about the mainframes.
That's what I work in, financial. We're crunching numbers all day long, man.
Yeah.
And the thing just keeps running, you know? Every system has its place, you know? A small system, medium system, large system. It all has its place.
Well, you know what the problem with some of the bigger media, like Network World, is sometimes, a little bit, they're kind of in the back pocket of Microsoft because Microsoft is such an ad contributor, so it's such a point of revenue, that sometimes I think they feel, I'm not sure, I'm sure Microsoft doesn't pressure them, but I think sometimes they feel the pressure to kind of beat the Microsoft drum a little bit.
Are you calling into question their journalistic integrity?
Never!
I know. That's
actually...
Those guys.
It's one of my pet peeves. Is the media, the mainstream media that I think is owned by big corporations.
They won't bite the hand that feeds. You know, they're not
exactly
stupid.
Exactly.
They're not going to cut their own throats.
They're in business.
Yeah, they want to make a living, just like Brian wanted to before Apple screwed him.
Now let me ask you. You guys talked about how Apple are a bunch of bastards about bringing developers in, having them show everything about their application, and then turning around and stealing it. Are they really that bad?
They have done that quite a few times in the past. It happens. It's basically, so Apple has their Worldwide Developer Conference every year, which they're having their next one starting on August 7th, coming up here, which they'll probably show OS 10.5 and all the cool new features that are going to take away my user base. But, so they do that quite a bit, though. I mean, they will bring in application developers. They have tech days. They have debug sessions. They have labs. And they bring in developers. They invite developers in as kind of a special treat. They get to really work with developers to make sure certain types of applications run well under OS X. And oftentimes what will happen is in the next release or the release after of OS X, you'll see that same functionality built into the OS. And Apple's really done this forever. I mean,
that's how they started with Xerox, really.
I mean, this has happened for a very, very long time. It's just kind of a trend. There, between that and Apple's consistent adoption of a new technology, and then the next year demanding that all developers switch to that technology, and then the next year completely dropping that technology, such as OpenDoc, the predecessor to Carbon, HyperCard, a lot of different technologies that they really push on developers.
They just yank it away from you
after demanding that everyone switch to it. It becomes very difficult to dedicate the time necessary to stay on top of it, let alone stay competitive against Apple itself.
You know, that's another area where open source is strong, because if there's, say, just take, like, for example, GStreamer. It's kind of the hot multimedia framework right now. Let's say 2 years from now, something better comes out, right? Well, the thing is you can still build an application for it, because the code is out there. It's in the universe. It's open. You can always get that code. But where with Apple, like with their OpenDoc, whatever the crap that thing was, if they just pull it away, you no longer have access to it.
Great.
Now, do you guys actually know anybody who had a program that was, you know, an Apple application where Apple took them in and said, okay, you know, we're interested in your product, you know, we're considering buying you and having you develop for us full time? Do you actually know somebody that actually happened to?
I think they're living it.
Nope. Did we lose them? I think we might have lost them.
What the hell did I? Oh, did I? What the heck?
Dane just hung up on him.
No.
You hang up on everybody, Dan, or just?
Must have.
Just those guys.
Stay away from the keyboard, Dan.
The beauty of live shows. Dan fucks up on a regular basis.
No, I don't know what happened there.
It might have just dropped out.
It's because you said, I like G-spot, and you like...
F-spot, G-spot, whatever. Oh, man.
Your mind was in the gutter, Dan.
And for some reason, it's almost like I can't reconnect to them.
What are you running on that machine, Arch?
No, it's not. It's
Skype?
It's like Skype dropped me.
Is the stream still going? No, actually, the stream is down, Dan.
Oh, that's not good. Everything down?
The stream shouldn't be down.
Hello?
I see people dropping off now.
Stream cut off.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, hello. Gentlemen. How you doing?
Hey, I'm not sure.
Here we are again. Did the stream drop?
What happened, man?
I don't know.
I have
everything just died over here for some reason.
They said the stream dropped, the Skype dropped, everything dropped. So.
Hey, what it is, man.
I'm just a figure we insulted you guys somehow.
No. You guys are cool, man. We like you guys.
Oh, no. We don't hang up on people. We just berate you while you're on until you go away.
Awesome. Yeah, where's the berating? I'm feeling like there's a little too much of a love fest going on here.
You
I want you guys to tear into me. I want you to go all Bill O'Reilly on me.
No.
So what you were saying before is in a sense, Steve Jobs is like the Vlad Tepes of the computer world. That he invites you into his house, he hears your ideas,
feeds you dinner,
and then puts you out in front of the company on a steak.
Yeah, no, I mean, kinda, yeah. I mean, I don't want to imply that, you know, Apple is filled with these horrible people and they bear all this ill will. It's just the way they do business. I don't necessarily appreciate.
Well, you know, they're working, as you touched on earlier, they're working at such a breakneck pace to keep up that I think that they just kind of consider it a way of doing business to stay competitive. And they also consider probably for the greater good, in a sense, that, yeah, it might hurt one dev, but for the greater good of the Mac community, we need to do this.
Now,
did you guys hear my question? Do you guys actually know somebody who got brought into Apple's offices? And, you know, we're talked to with, you know, their engineers, and, you know, they were, you know, went through the whole thing of demonstrating everything, talking about their source code, talking about their APIs, and then, you know, turned around and got screwed over. Do you guys actually know somebody?
I think they're living it.
So I'm trying to figure out how to best answer this without getting myself in too much trouble here. Yes,
so it's you.
We do know people, multiple people, as in more than one, but say less than 20, just to be as vague as possible, who are in that sort of scenario. And if you want very public examples, I recommend checking out, you know, the story of Watson and Confabulator. Also, it is an interesting corollary. If anyone is really interested in researching the topic, check out the story of Panic and their MP3 player, did not.
Now, Confabulator is the widgets, right? The desktop widgets?
Yes, they are the desktop widgets.
They turned around and released their own version of that, right?
Yeah, very, very similar to an almost ridiculous degree. Basically, I mean, Confabulator was developed by two very cool, very long-term Mac developers who were basically, I mean, Apple loyalists through and through, and good developers and designers, and they developed it in a very unique way at the time.
Dan, they're saying on the IRC that BinRev is still down.
No, it's back up.
It's back up now.
Go ahead.
You guys rocking?
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Apple didn't need to. Even if they were going to create that functionality that was similar, they didn't need to do it in a way that was so technologically similar. It didn't necessarily make any sense to do so, but they did, which raises a lot of eyebrows, to say the least.
But not for nothing. I mean, this is par for the course with Apple. You know, they've done this since the early days.
Normal.
Back when
they went into
Xerox PARC, you know.
Absolutely. This is how they got started. This is how they rolled. This is how they grew big. This is how they got small.
Yeah,
this
you know what I think it is? I think Mac enthusiasts just kind of convinced themselves that,
it's better for the developer because the developer gets challenged, and so it's okay. It's not a big deal. But then, you know, you experience it, you have a lot closer experience with it, and you realize it's not actually like you convince yourself that it is. And I say this because when the confabulator thing, because that's one of the more recent big ones, when the confabulator thing happened, I remember in the forums, all the people were like, this guy is such a whiner. What is his problem? Yeah. And, you know, it turns out he had a very valid point.
And same with the Watson guy and whatnot. I can't remember the name of it, but if anyone who's listening remembers back to old, like, System 6 and System 7 of Mac OS.
Alan?
They introduced...
Alan, you're the Apple apologist on the show.
They introduced that functionality where you could click that little button in the title bar and it would collapse the window into the title bar. And that was originally a little shareware application that became popular. And Apple basically, without trying to sound mean to Apple, ran out of ideas of what to put into their OS for the next release. So they just simply copied it. It basically, they just took a little tiny utility that very few people were using but was relatively popular and put it in. And that was a new big version, and thus making someone's business, however small, obsolete.
Now, wait.
Pretty much every release.
You know what? Once again, you guys are wrong, because what Apple is doing is taking a good project and making it superior. It's called
superior Apple product, baby.
It's called superiorizing. And
I've got to say, you are the coolest Apple apologist I've ever talked to.
When you are superiorized, you will understand.
You mean they're embracing and extending?
No, superiorizing.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
The philosophy.
Making it elite.
Incredibilizing.
Yeah.
Yes, incredibilizing, superiorizing, it doesn't matter. It's all the same thing.
Well, that does sound like a really good thing.
Caramelizing?
Yeah. Now, you guys have that website where you basically took over an Apple user website.
Right.
And it was really crusty. It was really old. You guys redesigned it. We released the website, and basically everybody jumped down your throats about it. They didn't like what you were doing with the website. They didn't like that you weren't posting enough. They didn't like that, you know, you're getting married and have a life.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about it? And
God damn it.
The thing that was most confusing to us is how passionately angry people were. And I thought to myself, like, I've been going to Slashdot for, like, ever. Like, you know, what, 4 or 5 years? I don't know. And I thought, if Slashdot tomorrow turned into a gardening website where all they talked about was how to grow carrots, I wouldn't be that upset. I'd just stop going. You know,
isn't that what they do now? They have just a bunch of vegetables and carrots over there.
Pretty much,
talking about stuff.
But the thing: if you don't like it, you stop going.
You don't write personal attacks. And so when you know we put a lot of work into the site. It was thousands of static HTML pages and. You know, with a lot of hard work, it was turned into a combo of a media wiki and WordPress and much more dynamic, and there was a comment system put in place and all this kind of stuff, and we do all this work, and then we release it, and the first complaint is, I don't like the dots. You're not going to leave those dots, are you? Those are ugly.
Yeah, because there was barely perceptible dots in the theme.
You guys are too nice. That's what your problem is. You're too nice. I would have told them to go fuck themselves.
We kind of started doing that recently, and man, did it set them off.
Once again, you guys are wrong, because you know what? It doesn't matter how much effort and work you put into it. If something sucks on your site,
they're
going to tell you, you know?
Yeah.
They don't care.
They sure did.
They don't care how good it is. Nobody, you know, you're not going to get, oh, your site looks great. You may get one or two of those, but they're going to let you know what they don't like.
You got to be pretty.
There's going to be those one or two people that will always bitch and moan. And they're
going to
be so loud.
If it was one or two people, man,
I'd
put up with it.
Yeah.
But holy crap.
It really feels like it was a... I mean, it's just... You don't get that, though, with other communities. Like the Windows users, there's so many of them. They're just so dispersed that you can't even really count them too much. But like
most Windows users can't figure out how to send a fucking email. That's the problem.
Right. Well, they're too busy getting spyware with Internet
Explorer.
That's true.
If you go to a forum titled The Angry Drunkards Forum, and the only people that ever go there are angry drunkards, they're going to be a little bit nicer than what we went through with this Mac community website. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, it was so over the top as to, for a while, I actually thought these people were joking with me. Like the first few, I started joking back with them, and it just made them angrier. And I'm like, wow, that's weird. They made a good joke the first time.
Yeah, yeah, and you know,
it's bizarre.
And through the Linux Action Show, we've been a lot more contact with the Linux community. We haven't gotten nearly this kind of response. It's all been, you know, there's a few suggestions on things to do differently,
sure,
but they're always really positive. Or, you know, hey, thanks, I like the show, maybe I ought to try this. You know, it's not like, you effing moron, I can't believe you freaking did this. What are you, a child? Have you never used a computer before? I pity your family.
I hope your children get herpes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it wouldn't be so bad. Again, if this were isolated, if we hadn't already heard so many stories of so many other webmasters and shareware developers and commercial software developers, myself included, who had gone through the same or at least very similar experiences with other Mac communities. And so we've just kind of taken the logical step and said, well, this seems to be the Mac community.
Yeah, and so we figured every day Linux is a community. If Linux itself is community driven. There's thousands of sites that are community driven. Linux community does this every day. Let's see if the Mac community can do it. So we're going to turn over ResExcellence.com. We're going to give it to the Mac community. We're going to give them the wiki logins, the WordPress logins, and we're going
to
let them try to run the site
and
see if the Mac community can do what the Linux community does every day.
Hell, we'll even support it. We'll keep paying for the servers to see what they can pull off.
Yep.
I'm not confident that they can keep it going. But
if they can, great on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's because you will not be able to understand the superiority of what they do.
No.
You're not elite, man.
No.
You're not elite.
Boy, do I agree with you on that.
Do you guys have a .Mac account?
Oh, God. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. We were going to do the podcast all using iLife.
Oh, man. There's a whole other thing. They did their big announcement of, oh, look at, you can do podcasting with all the Apple's iLife software, and if you have a .Mac account, it'll publish right to .Mac, and you'll have to you'll podcast everywhere automatically.
And it's
right
only $99 a year, right?
Yeah,
seriously.
So we're like, okay, we'll buy it. And then we found out, okay, so we can only store like 100 megs worth of content on there. So we have to pull down everything after the most current, like, two or three episodes.
Yeah, and of course your bandwidth is throttled. You have limited storage and throttled bandwidth.
Like, as soon as we got like 10 people listening to it, boom, it got so slow we couldn't upload the next episode.
But seriously, we were drinking the Apple Kool-Aid. I mean, we were there at the Apple Store buying iLife, getting .Mac.
Oh,
we were going to go for it.
I called the Apple Store like 30 times waiting for the moment that it was available.
I mean, this is the transition we've made.
Phone calls, I'll never get back.
We've gone from doing that to screw it in the last few months just from this community.
Yeah.
Well, and it's all the technical problems.
So, if you drink the Apple Kool-Aid and you go to the .Mac and you go to the GarageBand and the iTunes,
I guess I really haven't drank
the podcasting. Is your podcast delivered in the AAC format?
Of course.
Or is it delivered in the MP3?
It used to be.
Yeah.
We changed it when we switched to General Tech Show for Cast Blast. Linux Action Show has always been BOG, MP3. It's never been tied to .Mac. Linux Action Show has always been hosted on our servers, but Cast Blast was a .Mac, and it was AEC because that's the only thing iWeb would let you export it out as.
Oh, iWeb's a whole nother story.
I mean, of course, it's it's Apple's baby format, so of course they're going to force you to use it.
Yep.
Which, you know, it does sound good, and it is slightly smaller, so we were thinking, hey, great. So we did it. But, you know, once we switched off .Mac, the first thing we did was drop AEC.
But that locks you into, like, basically iPods, doesn't it?
Yeah.
iPods and iTunes,
iPods and iTunes, and it sucked.
Which was exactly Apple's intention, and which we were too blinded to realize that, but when we took a step back and realized
it. Kool-Aid tasted good. It had that nice aftertaste of Irish whiskey, and you went with it.
Yeah.
It's just, a couple months down the road, you get some weird disease, and, you know, oh, that came from the drink. I shared the cup with the wrong person.
And, you know, our experience doing the Linux Action Show.
Wait. Let me clarify this just a little bit. If you have some good Irish whiskey, there is no possible way that you could catch anything off the glass.
Other than maybe cutting your lip. Good Irish whiskey. It just tasted like it.
Okay. No, it was cheap Apple whiskey wrapped in a nice flashy box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Boone's Farm
brand.
The Boone's Farm of Irish whiskey.
But, you know, when we did the Linux Action Show, we did it right. You know, we did it on a Linux server. We did it under Linux. We did it using WordPress. It was such a better experience than using Apple's integrated solution.
It was night and day. Night and day.
Well, welcome to the Linux community, guys. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, right.
Well, definitely. Thanks. It's been a wild couple of days, and I'm kind of looking forward to getting a good night's sleep in a couple of days, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully it kind of simmers down, because we've had enough with the comments and the emails from the frantic, crazy Mac users.
Yeah, and we've only had one server die so far.
Yeah.
Brought that back up, but yeah, it's been a little bit wild, and we really appreciate you guys having us on. This has been very cool. Gives us an opportunity to prove that we're not the noobs so many think we are.
No, you guys are good, man. Keep up the good work, man. You guys are always welcome to come back.
Wait, why is everybody leaving?
We're not cutting you off.
Everybody's like, goodbye.
Oh, yeah, don't cut me off. I'm not leaving.
It sounds like everybody's
you sounded like,
you
were done with us.
No, not at all.
I don't know how that happened. I just actually got to go to the Linux Action Show for the second time in my life because... I mean, I love your show. I mean, I really do.
Yeah.
You guys have
Oh, thanks, man.
I do.
We're trying our best. You know, we want to do well. There's not a lot of really great Linux content in general. You know, I mean, there's great software for Linux, and there's some really great community websites for Linux. But you know, like the good podcasts, the good commercial software, a lot of the stuff that other platforms have, we're catching up on.
And yeah, you know, it's true. Like, you go to iTunes, and there's, like, 900 trillion Mac podcasts.
Yeah.
But there's only, ridiculous. there's you guys, there's a few other well-known podcasts, but other than that, you know,
yeah,
there's not
Linux
a lot.
Link and Lug and us and a few others.
And what's so cool is we've had a really great reception from the other Linux podcasts, and I think that also to a degree reflects on the Linux community, because, you know, we have no problem, you know, hanging out with Linux Link Tech Show or the Jack Attack, because it's not like we're competing with them, we're all just a community.
Right, we're just chilling out.
That's what's so cool about it.
It is very, very nice.
You know what?
Very, very nice.
If I had to have one complaint about your show, and what it would be is, as I was listening to episodes, 4, 5, and 6?
Right on. There it comes.
4, 5, and 6. My one complaint is that they seem to get... No, they seem to get shorter. It's like...
Not enough porn for Dan.
I mean, I was like really enjoying your show, and I'm like saying to myself, "Wait a minute, it can't be
actually,
over. There's got to be another 20 minutes."
You're absolutely right, and you know why that is? It is really hot in Western Washington right now, and neither of us have air conditioning.
Yeah, we're not very used to the heat,
so we turn off all our fans and close our doors. And by the time we're done with a half hour episode, it's like 95 degrees, and we look pathetic. And so we stop and
we know how you feel.
Yeah,
we know how you feel.
I make them suffer through that all the time.
Up north of Seattle. I used to live in Snohomish, if you know where that is.
Oh, yeah, I work in Snohomish.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a nice town. Yeah, it has been really hot. When we recorded last week's episode, the outside of my house was 105 degrees, and the inside of where we were recording was getting up to 95, 98 degrees. So we'd stop in between segments, turn on the AC for 5 minutes, because I have like this little dumpy portable AC unit, and just try to cool down the room as much as possible, turn it off, and then record again.
Yeah, we don't really remember about the last 10 minutes of the last episode.
What you guys should check out is a few episodes ago with us, you can hear the air conditioning in the background in Dan's house. And then if you listen during the winter podcasts, you hear Dan's radiator going. It sounds like a freaking jet engine, you know? Something like that.
Plus, he's got that compact server that's going to take off the desk any minute because it's not bolted to the desk.
Yeah, when winter comes around, we just pull the compact server out into the room.
It just adds ambience to the show.
Yeah.
It's ambience.
Warms up the whole house.
You know what?
That's why Brian has his G5 tower. That thing is hot.
Yeah, you had made a comment that like
what we try to do too is we try to vary between.
Everything just stopped. Okay, you tried to vary between.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you made a comment that unlike Apple or Windows, there's not a lot of as many Linux podcasts, and I love the fact that there's a handful of Linux podcasts. I think each one of them is great, and I listen to all of them.
So do I.
But my concern is if we get too many more, it's going to be hard to listen to so many. Because, you know, like, you know, that's, I want to listen to all of them.
You need an hour commute, Dan. That's what I do, an hour each way.
And if we get too many more, it's going to be hard to listen on a regular basis. I mean, but, you know, you guys come out with your show, and I was like, wow. The first episode is like, you guys got some good sound quality. You're right on top. How much preparation do you put into your show, and how much post-production do you do?
Weeks and weeks and weeks. It's absolutely amazing how much time we put into the show.
And by weeks, we mean about 10 minutes, and then also just track some news stories throughout the week.
We don't really spend too much time. I mean, we don't do a live show, so we get the luxury of usually getting at least a few minutes to edit up a little bit. So we'll take little breaks between segments, but not much.
Yep. And yeah, that is another benefit, is because we're not doing the live, we just kind of, we start when we're ready and we finish when we're ready. And then, you know, we post it that night usually or something like that. So it's,
and like our little intro segments where, you know, it's like this week on the Linux Action Show type stuff. Man, I usually have to do those 5 or 6 times because my tongue is retarded. And so, you know, it takes a couple of attempts, but we don't really do too much prep. I mean, we just kind of roll with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it pretty much just is two really, really geeky guys sitting in a room talking about Linux. So,
you guys are more than a worthy addition to the Linux podcast world, man. You guys rock. You're cool.
Next thing, Pat's going to be asking for phone numbers and then a date.
No, I only do that with Bruce Perrins.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Absolutely.
You know, I haven't listened to episode 7 yet because I've been trying to catch up. And I'm looking at the listing of episode 7, and it's got like a whole bunch of stuff I'm really interested in. and you know, the whole Flash 8, Flash 9 stuff that's going on with Linux, you know, it's really, I don't know how it's affecting the rest of you guys, but it's really killing me because it's killing my kids.
I know. They want to go to like SesameStreet.org. And,
you know, I mean, a lot of stuff is now moving. I mean, even MySpace has moved to Flash,
I know.
Flash 8.
I totally know where you're coming from, man. I have a 2.5-year-old son, man, and he wants...
Yeah, you know, you got MySpace and YouTube and everything.
He wants to go to, like, the kiddie websites, you know, like, you know, Noggin.
Yeah, it's the major Flash sites, really,
It's all Flash, man, totally.
I mean, I just don't understand why they really dropped the ball.
And for me, it's... I like to watch the Daily Show clips on YouTube.
Uh-huh. Has YouTube moved to Flash 8 now?
I don't know. I've been tracking that.
I've been okay with it.
Have you guys seen that guy's blog?
Yes. He's talking about the next release of Flash for Linux.
I think YouTube's using a little older version,
Yeah, I think it's 7 they're using. It works okay. I've never had a problem with Linux.
But I am anxious myself just for the new Flash. It's one of the things that it's like, once a technology becomes so ubiquitous like that throughout the web, you kind of have a responsibility to support all the different platforms. And I really think that Linux has more of a desktop market share than people realize.
Yeah. Yeah. Heck, we're here.
we got to count for a couple of years, really.
A couple.
Exactly.
We got a couple computers. But really it is. It's like, you know, I think it should be like some sort of computer law. If you become an industry standard, you now have a responsibility to support the industry. You know, I think there should be that same thing for all the different types of formats out there, but especially web-based ones, because the web is supposed to be cross-platform. Don't make the web, you know, proprietary.
Whatever. ActiveX is awesome.
Well, that's what we have Web 2.0 for now, don't we? To make it proprietary.
Yeah, we'll see about that. not as long as those Web 2.0 sites embed Flash.
Or, you know, we don't need them just to embed Flash. We just need to stream.
I think our audio player requires Flash 7 on the site.
Yeah, we need a Windows Media format on everything. WMV, baby.
You're just evil.
Oh, my gosh. As long as it has copy protection.
Quite.
Make sure you get that copy protection on there.
Don't get started with the DRM, man. Freaking iTunes is so freaking... It so pisses me off. It's not even funny.
I know it.
It's like, why do people spend their goddamn money on that website, man, buying shit from there?
If you buy it through Sharp Music, it strips it right out for you.
Yeah,
they don't realize
there are perfectly good Russian websites that will sell it to you for a dollar.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, a dollar? It's like 2 cents.
Two cents.
My wife uses all of MP3.
Yeah, you know what, actually,
She has $20 up there, and she, I don't know. She has more music that can fit on her hard drive. You're talking about what?
Well, he's saying you can get an entire album for a dollar, which is so slick, and you get to choose your bit rate, which is awesome. And that's actually why I prefer to buy my music on CD still, because it still sounds better.
Yeah.
And I get to choose my format and my bit rate, which I'm, you know, with when you get off the iTunes Music Store, you're totally locked into whatever they did. And I know people in the Mac community say this is impossible, but I hear a sound difference between music on the iTunes Music Store and music I have ripped. I have compared them on my home stereo system, and I can hear a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, why isn't Apple being sued as a monopoly for iTunes?
Again, once again, the problem is, you know, your home stereo system isn't an Apple product, so you're not using a superior audio quality.
That's true. You have to buy the Apple products.
Right.
Yeah. You gotta get the 99 Apple condom.
Yeah, I should. I should.
The 99 Apple condom.
I should go out and get that $300... I should go out and get that $300 Apple stereo system, too, that plugs into the iPod. That way I can have all Apple equipment across the board, I suppose.
Yeah, then you could be a real man.
I think one of the reasons, just possibly, Apple iPod Hi-Fi or whatever it is. As one of the reasons maybe the Apple isn't getting sued over iTunes is maybe possibly because all the different music industries, the recording industry, has so much money right now invested in iTunes that they might be shielding them from legal troubles by influencing people that might sue them. I don't know. It would just be one theory because I think they need this to be successful so that people, you know, hopefully they think, stop pirating their music. And so I think right now Apple has the right people in the right industries in their back pocket.
Yeah.
I mean, really, who's going to sue them?
Possibly.
I mean, who's going to complain? The Linux users?
No.
All 20 of us?
What's happening is some of these European countries like France and Norway and Sweden, you're starting to hear rumblings about lawsuits for monopoly. It really is a monopoly when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, but that's a perfect point. It's because those companies don't have the American business interests. You know, they have their own nationalist interests. They don't have the business behind it like we do here in America.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, on the flip side of that is, you know,
it's a possibility.
Most of the people out there go out and buy an iPod.
Yeah, that's all they know is iPod.
So until they start experiencing those issues with transferring and all that other crap, nobody's going to care for another 3 or 4 years down the line. And probably they won't even give a damn then either. They'll just
go out and rebuy
it. They'll just rebuy everything. Yep. They bought it on CD.
Which
now
is exactly what they want.
Now they buy it in the new Windows Media Player format or whatever the hell it is. And we'll just be sitting there going,
because everybody.
What about AUG support? And they'll be like, F you.
And I'll just keep buying it on CD as long as they do that.
Exactly, man.
That's, you know, doing the Linux Action Show, I've noticed AUG is really a superior format. It's not just smoke that we blow up people's butts. AUG is better. And I didn't really ever quite appreciate that until we did the Linux Action Show.
It sounds really good. It's smaller and it sounds better. You guys should provide extra content on your AUG file to get people to download the AUG file.
Spit it out.
What we do on our show, Dan, like, during the pre-show stuff, he'll show us, like, disgusting porn stuff that he watches. And it, like, totally freaks us out. And Dan will put it on the AUG file only. And, you know, people download it just to hear our gut-wrenching reactions to his videos.
Just to hear us bitch about it, yeah.
That is a great idea.
That's fantastic.
It's like a special behind the scenes if you use the AUG stuff.
Yeah, I'll leave the porn whatnot stuff up to you, Chris.
Okay, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
Dan can help if you need
anything. I've actually got a question for you guys real quick. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the, you know, switching from Mac to Linux, yada, yada. How interesting is that really to you guys? So like I figured that there would be people that would be interested. I guess I figured, you know, people like us would be interested, and maybe a handful of other people with similar experiences would want to hear, you know, kind of our experiences so they could kind of relate it to their own, and if nothing else, commiserate with us. But it seems like a lot of people are interested, and a lot of people are upset that people are interested. And so, like our next episode's coming up, and we've had a lot of our listeners say, you know, they'd like to hear some more about it. But we were like, well, you know, how much more should we actually talk about
it? Yeah, do people really care?
How really interesting is it to hear? I mean, we're just two guys. I mean, I mean, you know, maybe we're two guys with a kind of interesting experience on this one hand, but it's only so interesting. I don't know. What do you guys think? How? I mean,
here's my opinion.
Is it really that interesting to hear that people are making a lot of switches like this?
Here's my opinion, and let me equate it to another Linux podcast that.
Good opinion,
Dan.
That is the best opinion I've ever heard you say.
A couple of people on the show don't really like this, but I listen to the Linux log, and basically he goes through and talks about the news of the week, and I enjoy the Linux log. And occasionally, he has derailed from giving us the news of the week to talking about his personal experiences, and he's doing it more and more. And I find that fascinating. And time again, I've heard a lot of people.
This is the Linux Log podcast.
Adrian's a nice guy, man.
It's really improved since when he first started doing it. It's a great podcast, I think, and I enjoy that.
Because when he first started, it was the Linux Log podcast. Remember that?
But what I think is, the more personal experience
Vagina.
That you can interject into your podcast, the more interesting it could be. It will be. That's what I really like.
Absolutely.
And I hear a lot of other people express that, too, because, you know, we could go to NewsForge, we could go wherever and read up, you know, what other people are saying about this product or reviewing that, some of the pros and cons. But when you interject some of your personal experience into the whole thing, I think that makes a world of difference. So I would prefer, you know, that you guys would travel down that pathway, because it's different than what anybody else is going to talk about.
What it is, man, my take of it is, you know, I've looked at Apple.
Absolutely.
Apple's nice.
I mean, like, you can't.
Look at it. Link just rolled over your
Apple,
ass.
Apple's nice stuff, man, you know, but there is an attitude that I notice with Apple people. I have friends that are Apple users. They do have that yuppie mentality. I drive a BMW. I go to Starbucks. You know, it's like, it is an elitist attitude to a certain degree. You know, you laugh about but it's true. They have a freaking attitude.
I don't have gonorrhea.
You know, listen, they're nice machines. Take it for what it is, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But they have the attitude. It's like, you know, they're better than you. You know, I had enough of that shit in high school. I don't need that now in my life. You know, it's like, you know, piss off, you know?
It sounds like the only thing Pat heard on there is should we continue to bash Apple?
I love bashing Apple. I could go all night, man.
Apple.
It's like when
you... I'll tell you guys, as far as your podcast goes, right, as long as you two guys continue to find it interesting enough to get together and talk back and forth, someone else will find it interesting enough to listen to. And that's really about all it is. Don't even concern yourself with trying to make a wonderful professional show and build it up for someone else's interest. Or what you think their interest might be, unless, you know, of course, you're going to try and, like, sell advertising or something like that.
Who would do that in a podcast,
no,
Mr. Watson?
I think the listeners will enjoy it a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah, look at all the freaking trouble, right? God bless you, John.
Really. Makes sense. That makes sense. It's something we've gotten requests to talk about it. We're just wondering, it's like, at a certain point, people probably get sick of it.
I was just wondering if, you know, maybe those three people that were requesting it are the only three people that want to hear about it, and I don't want to,
Anyway. Out of the six people that listen, and that's the kind of thing that I think would end up separating your show from any other Linux show, and you know, granted, there's, like you just said, there's not a lot of Linux shows out there right now. And, you know, if you're just going to regurgitate news and interject some stuff like that, you know, you could have a decent show. But when you actually provide personal experience into that, that to me and a lot of other people I know find that, you know, fascinating. And that's what they listen for. And, you know, if you can do that and have fun doing it, that's all that matters.
Awesome.
Cool.
Now, don't expect to get any sponsorship from
Apple
afterwards, but...
I like it.
But that's the way it goes, you know?
Right.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah. We're a little ways off from being able to get some sponsors.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, there was a bit of a guilty conscience because we have been Mac users for so long. And you know what else is? We've actually, like a year or so ago, I had converted a few friends to the Mac, so I felt a little guilty deciding all of a sudden I no longer liked Apple.
I actually got an angry phone call today.
Did you?
From a friend that I converted to a Mac after just deluging him with the wonders of the Mac for years. He converted about a year ago, and 1 year later, I just ditch him. And he is pissed.
What are you going to do? It's, you know, it's the way the computer industry is. Things change.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and there's people like my mom, who is a graphic artist. I don't think I'll ever get her to switch from the Mac. But there's people out there like my dad, who I think would make a good Linux user. Or, you know, Aunt so-and-so, who just wants to browse the web. Perfect example is who I think somebody I could actually put Ubuntu on her machine. So I really think it's getting to that point now where I would be comfortable giving it to family members, knowing that they're going to call me up whenever they have a problem. So, and that's really saying something for the Linux desktop.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So, in your opinion, Ubuntu is ready for the general Linux user, and Linux in general, for general computer user?
Some of them. I'd say that any OS, that no single OS is ready for everybody. So, you know, it's
like
all
Windows not being ready for anybody.
Yeah, it's not ready for anybody. So, and Mac OS X. I'd say Mac OS X is probably a good system for some people. For me, it's not. Linux is. So,
you know, yeah, if that's what floats your boat, then that's your choice. But I think if you're a brand new computer user, has never used a computer, or is not very familiar with computers, so you don't have like this mindset on how to do something. Or even if you do know a little bit, I think you could drop, you know, if it's just an internet email chat user, and maybe they want to use Skype, why couldn't they use Ubuntu?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, like for an example, I had a friend, and they have an HP laptop, and they wanted to put Linux on there. I installed Ubuntu, Dapper Drake, on his laptop, and when it was done, he had full video support. He had audio. His battery was supported. His Wi-Fi was supported. His Synaptics touchpad with a scroll wheel was supported. His little media buttons along the top, with including the wireless button and the audio buttons, were all supported with on-screen displays. I mean, that kind of experience, that is ready right there.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it doesn't get better on the Windows side.
No, it does.
So what better could it be?
That's exactly right. I mean, to get that stuff working on Windows, I'd have to load all this different crap software, and then I'd have 900 icons down in my system tray and everything beeping at me every time I move the mouse. So, I mean, I really think for those kinds of users, Linux is totally there.
I got my dad running Linux, man, and he hasn't had any problems. He notices that the machine is running faster, and he hasn't had pop-ups come up every so often when he's on the internet. You know, saying to update his registry.
Right. And, you know, that's really all they will notice, too, is that, and he won't have to download SpyBot. I have a neighbor who called me over to her house, and she had 14 viruses on her system. And she had all this spyware on her system. Her Windows XP install had just put, she'd only had Windows XP for 1 day. But she didn't have virus protection or spyware protection. And in 1 day, her husband went to an online gambling site, and he got all of that crap. And her system was running at 99% CPU usage. Brand new computer was totally unusable.
That's a beautiful thing.
What I want usually only takes two minutes
in order to get that many viruses.
Where's the Windows dumpster, man?
That's just not ready for the desktop.
When everyone's running out to buy their new Vista machines, I want the old machines. give them to me.
You know, it's...
No kidding.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that is definitely, it's interesting to see. Even with, I gotta say, I mean, the only place where Windows really shines is the applications that only Windows has. Right? I mean, once you go beyond that, Windows isn't offering a whole lot. And they have DirectX is great for game devs, but if there were commercial software developers that are really focusing on Linux, you'd have things like standardized 3D and audio stuff on Linux.
Absolutely.
So it's not that Linux isn't ready, it's just that we just now need the software on there.
Right. We need the commitment from enough commercial software providers to make that happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be big commercial software providers. It's just, all it needs to be is people like us, but enough of us.
And somebody's got to start it up and get it really going. I mean, Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What the hell?
Major lag, man.
Hello?
No, all I heard was Link's wife in the background, and then...
That was fantastic.
You know, he was trying to make... I think he was talking about how he's all excited about...
I made a commercial. I said it sounds like a PBS commercial. All we need is some support from people like you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, one of the things we didn't touch on is that you don't have to sell to software developers. You don't have to sell to end users directly. If you could get, like, a license or a bundle deal with, like, a Linspire in their Click and Run or Zandros or Nouvelle, if they could... You know, if you could license to them, that they bundle it with their distribution, that's another great way to make a living. And you don't have to sell directly to end users all the time. Now, you can still offer to end users, but there are options like that in the Linux community. Yeah. Where, like, if you want to include your third-party app in with Windows, yeah, good luck on that.
Right. There are a lot more opportunities to sell software on Linux than I think a lot of developers realize at this point, which is both good and bad. It's good from my point of view in that... There's not a lot of competition, so it opens things up a little bit for me. But it would also be nice to have some other people, you know, kind of blaze the way first to make my life a little easier.
So now, you guys have really seemed to come around and to the open source, to the Linux whole you know philosophy, to the community and everything. Just to, you know, so I'm clear on this. How long were you in the Linux community before you jumped ship from Apple? I mean, have you guys been in it for a long time, or is it relatively new to you?
Well, I'll let Chris speak for himself, but for me, I'm relatively recent. I've always kind of, I mean, I'm a developer by trade, and primarily I've been a Mac developer for many years. But in various contracts and outsourcing gigs, I've had to do Linux and Windows development as well. So I've started doing Linux development really only maybe a year or so ago, and really got into it about 6 months ago on a project, and it's kind of just snowballed out of control since then.
Yeah, and for myself, I've probably played with the Linux desktop since the first releases of Mandrake when they first were coming out, but I was 80% OS X, and then I would play with Linux, and then of course on the server side I've always been 100% Linux. So I've been involved with that aspect of the Linux community for a long time, with the you know Samba mailing list or the Apache mailing, you know, just different server related stuff. But I never really got into the coolness of the Linux desktop. Until you know a few months ago before we started doing the Linux Action Show. So I've been involved with a different aspect of the community for quite a while. So I'm not new to Linux itself. In fact, for a long time, just to learn, I thought one of the best ways to learn Linux was I just said, okay, I'm going to use Gentoo to run my home site and to put my blog on. I said, you learn Linux using Gentoo. And so I did the whole stage one installation, and I went through the whole setup.
Look who's talking, man. Mister, I just got rid of Slackware on my laptop, and I'm running Ubuntu.
Yeah, well, I had to try it. You guys have all you know...
Poser.
You guys have all been, like, talking about it. So
I stopped running Slackware about 3 years ago, and I've been honest about the whole time.
I haven't stopped running Slackware. I still run Slackware on my desktop at home.
That's how it starts. I merely wanted to...
See, so you're the only... bastard that doesn't run it, Pat.
So when you use Slackware, do you do it with the Dropline GNOME interface or the whatever that Dropline or Drop
no,
Drop something GNOME?
I run Slackware and KDE on my laptop, and runs pretty well.
And that's kind of the official desktop that Slack supports now is KDE, right?
KDE
now, right? Yeah.
Slackware don't need GNOME.
Yeah,
apps.
I remember that. I remember actually following that they were complaining that. Right, you got Pine. You got Pine and Lynx. What else do you need?
And Scream.
What are they going to have a 2.6 kernel? That's what I want to know.
Oh, not to break everything up here, but I got to go. 4:30 in the morning comes really, really early.
Me too. Good night, Alan.
So, good night, everybody.
Good night, Alan.
Holy moly.
Night.
So is John's Watson head going to explode? Have you heard some of the postings from him lately? He was bitching about Tectonic, who we currently host with, right?
Yeah.
Dan, we haven't had any problems with Tectonic for the most part.
No.
We don't have any problems. I was talking with him yesterday, right? And when he first was bitching about his server problems, because I'm the one that told him to like get an account with Tectonic. And
he hates you now, man.
He said his server was always down.
Beforehand.
And I said, I went and looked at. Yeah, I looked at our uptime, and we've been up for 22 days. And I'm like, dude, we've been up for 22 days. I don't know what the hell your problem is. And but you know what? He has one of those managed server accounts.
He's got a different kind of account.
I think he chose the Windows XP.
A different kind of account.
Windows XP,
probably,
right.
Yeah. He chose the Windows XP account. But he's been having all kinds of problems. I feel bad for him.
Plus, he's feeling the stress. He's getting married pretty soon.
Yeah, congratulations to them.
Yeah, congratulations to John and Kelly.
Yeah.
Now, you two guys over in the Linux
Ryan knows show. That one, too.
When are you
John
guys getting
John
married?
John and Kelly are getting married the day before I'm getting hit. Well, we're not getting married. Oh.
No, Brian and I are not getting married. But Brian and his lady are getting married.
We're getting married on
you're just good friends, 6th, right?
The day after John and Kelly from the Jack Attack get married. Yeah.
Congratulations.
But not like that.
It's right up the coast of San Francisco, you know, so... We were wondering.
Hey, San Francisco's a nice town, man.
Yeah, no, there's a difference. Yeah.
Yeah, I like San Francisco.
But yeah, no, that's pretty cool that John and Kelly are getting married on the same weekend that Brian is.
Beat me by a day.
Where are you going for your honeymoon?
Fire Island.
We're actually holding out, and we're going to wait for the shuttle schedule. And we're going to try and catch one of the shuttle launches down in Florida.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Cool.
Yeah. Try and catch them before they don't have them anymore. You know?
You're right there, Alan.
Before the whole fleet explodes.
Yeah, we still have a shuttle.
Yeah, well, we still have a shuttle to see.
Yeah, you gotta watch it, though, because, you know, they get them random explosions caused falling pieces of styrofoam. So.
You know what's going to happen?
That's all right. That puts you in the history books.
You're going to get
there's worse ways to go.
Yeah, seriously. I could die in
blows
my bed
up when
or
hit by
a chunk of a space shuttle. That's no contest.
Yeah, if I could die by shuttle, that's got to be one of the best ways.
Seriously. Yeah, bring it.
What's going to happen is the Linux Action Show is going to go on like gangbusters for a couple of months, and then all of a sudden it's just going to stop dead, and that's because somebody will have a little unit coming on the way.
Oh,
and that'll kill that.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Right? Oh, no.
Just like Droops, right? Droops' wife is due any day now, right?
Yep. Yeah. There'll be a little Linux action show.
I got a few years of nonstop geekiness before I have another little trooper.
Yeah, if we have to, we'll record there in the delivery room. We'll be live on location.
I will be right there.
Sounds like a plan, man.
It's Linux, then wife and kid.
That's right.
Wait, you already have
a
kid?
Well, hey, you guys, I think we have to get going because it's... No, not yet.
Oh, I thought you said another little one.
But it's starting to get to be my time where I have to drive home because I have a bit of a commute to get back to my place, so yeah, I have to get going.
We're going to cut it off, man.
This poor sucker doesn't work from home.
So I want to thank you guys
all
for
right,
coming
so
on.
Really
I want to thank
you guys
for doing your show. I hope that we can keep this line of communication open.
Yeah,
you guys
thanks for
are,
having
you know,
us.
Really great.
Anytime.
And, you know, keep up the great work.
Oh, absolutely. This is fantastic.
This has been episode 150.
Yeah, definitely.
Good time.
You guys as well.
Please consider coming back on again sometime, you know?
And you know what?
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on at the last minute, too.
Yes. We had Pamela Jones lined up, and she had a bail on us at the last minute, so.
Oh, hey, no problem. Yeah.
But, you know, hey, it's great, you know, anyhow, because we got to talk with you guys.
We have no life. It's all good.
Yeah. Neither do we.
All right, so I guess I better close this up.
Yep.
Thank you guys for coming on.
Yep. Should I do some Frapper shout-outs before we cut off?
Go ahead, go do some Frapper shout-outs.
We've got JWP from Karlsruhe, Baden-Württemberg, Germany. We've got Jason Turning from Cordova, California. We've got Chief from Alslip, Illinois. And we've got Micah Ballou from Montreal, Canada. Thanks for logging on. This has been episode 150 of the Linux Link Tech Show. Anybody else? Blink, you got anything else to add before we sign off?
150.
It's been 150.
No,
right,
I'm just, you know, it's like it's a momentous thing. This is 3 years of broadcasting for us.
You guys started when? It was September, right, of 2003?
Since September of 2003, yes, it was.
Yeah, it's gone by quick, man.
So if you figure, you know, 50 shows a year, giving you, you know, a little bit of time off for Christmas and New Year's, this is it, 150.
Since I've been on the show since, when did I come on as a regular? February of 2005? We haven't taken a week off, I don't think.
Might have been there.
I think we might have taken 1 week off, not even.
No, I don't think we have.
No, since I've been on regularly.
Oh, on your way out tonight, make sure you say goodbye to my kids, because you're not going to see them again.
Looking forward to the next 150.
I think episode 200 is going to be the big one, man. That'll push us over what anybody else has done in the Linux, you know, podcast shows / whatever.
Well, you know what? If the Linux Action Show would get together and do it every day, we could catch up really fast. Anyway.
You know what we need to do? We need to have, like, the Linux conference.
All right.
We invite everybody. We pick a central location, and we invite all the shows, everybody, Linux Australia.
All five of them.
Log Radio. No, there's more than five. We'll even invite Adrian Bacon from the Linux Log. We like Adrian. He's a nice guy.
Oh, man. I like the Linux Log.
That'd be
Log.
Great, yeah.
We should have a big conference and just party down.
I think, yeah, that'd be awesome, you guys. Totally.
And invite the DDP
Linux
Hack Radio crew.
Conference.
We invite everybody,
Linux,
man.
Radio show conference.
Not that everybody will show up, but...
Yeah, where are we going to meet? The halfway would be what? Like
Chicago, maybe?
No, we'd be there.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago would be a good location to get, you know, our Canadian friends.
Bring
a
keg.
Yeah, as long as there's beer, we're there. Yeah.
It should be like someplace nobody would want to go to, like, I don't know.
Michigan's
South
about 4,000
miles
nice.
For a keg.
Iowa.
Right?
Iowa.
Iowa's a nice state.
Or
Iowa. Now there's a state that could use a big ass Linux party right there.
Indiana.
Iowa.
Indiana. We can crash at Ian Murdoch's place.
There we go.
There you go.
Or Wisconsin.
Hey, I love cheese. Cheese and wine, man. I'm there.
Or like something really wacky, like chili. That would
Chili's
be cool.
Supposed to be nice.
Or
the only problem,
Paraguay.
You know the whole thing about the whole like Latin America thing. I'm sure there are shows that are Spanish language. JZA is like the Linux podcast whore. He goes on every show and he posts on there. He's one of our regulars. He posts and he puts like voicemails to every show. He's on Linux Reality. He's on Jack Attack. He's on all the shows. He's like the guy. He's from Mexico. I'm curious to know how like the Spanish language Linux show scene is. Are they any? There's got to be some. I would think in Spain, you know, Linux is big in Spain, also Argentina, Chile.
You know, I'm sure there are some. You know what would be really,
Mexico?
Really awesome? You know what would be really awesome? If someone took a couple of those shows and translated them in English so that we could actually hear, you know, because my Spanish is really non-existent. So that would be pretty cool just to be able to listen.
I'm sure, you know, Linux is big in Germany. There's got to be a German podcast as well, I would think. I mean, we talked to plenty of developers. There's so many German developers out there.
Sure.
There's got to be a Linux German podcast. I know there's a Dutch one, right, Dan? Source 21?
You know what surprises me? That there is such a huge Linux community, or it seems to be a huge Linux community, in the United Kingdom, but yet there's only one podcast coming out of there that I'm aware of.
Well, the Slug Radio was going for a little bit, and then that died out pretty quick.
What, Lug Radio?
Slug. Remember those Scottish guys?
I mean, like, there's just so many.
Yeah, it's big over there.
And I just, we only have one. But, you know, maybe that's all you need out of the UK is Lug Radio, because they do a great job.
Yeah, they do a great job.
Oh. We got to get Ted Hager back on again.
Yeah, we'll get Ted back on.
Awesome, you guys.
And Jeremy Garcia.
Hey, you guys.
What?
Thanks for having us on the show. We're going to run.
Okay, yeah. You
have a good night, man.
All right, guys.
Take care. Thanks for coming on.
Have a safe trip home.
You guys, thanks for having us. Okay.
Anytime, man.
Keep
anytime.
Keep on rocking.
Thank you.
Take care. Wow, this is a long episode, man. We're going on what? 2.5 hours here?
2 hours and 39 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah, and I got to go. I got to be going on pretty soon, you know.
You know what the problem is with, with our get-up? That is again, the problem we have is we end up with, like, on a conference call like this with three or four people, and invariably one person's audio is lower than everybody else's. And it's hard to adjust for that. You know what I mean? Because you really can't. Because if I bump up the Skype, then like the other, like one person drowns up another person. You know what I mean? You hear what I'm saying, Link? Yeah, he does. He knows what I'm talking about.
I hear you.
You hear my pain?
I hear you, and I feel your pain, Dan. I feel it.
You know what? Tiki Bar Run in either 2 or 3 weeks. I'm going to solidify the plans with my wife.
I want you to know that I'm with you all the way, man.
Do it, man. Do it.
So I'm gonna solidify the plans and then put out the notice. It all depends on what week we are actually moving our shit down. But we are definitely... I said to my wife today, what about Tiki Bar? She's like, she definitely wants to do that before,
cool,
before
definitely,
the end of August.
Yeah.
So we'll get that solidified, and I'll send that information out to you and then to the Lug. We'll invite them, but nobody will show up again.
Next week we got...
Just don't...
Next week we got the Amarok guys coming on. That should be a good show.
Just don't what, Link?
The weekend of the 5th, man. I got to be in New York. That would really suck.
Dude, we're doing it the 5th, man. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's do it.
And you know what? What stinks is, you know, here we have, like, you know, a guest that we originally had lined up, couldn't make it on tonight, which would have given us a nice half hour...
45 minutes.
Before and after the show that we could talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Because I know Link wanted to talk about Arch installs, and I wanted to talk about Arch installs.
I wanted to talk about Opera.
Yeah, I had, like, you know, Arch installs and Slackintosh installs I wanted to talk about.
You know what it is, man? Once you start bashing about Apple, it just keeps going. Right. You can't help it, you know?
It's all our damn guests.
No, no. Listen,
come on.
I enjoyed freaking bashing on Apple, man. It was very enlightening.
I know you did. I enjoyed our guests very much.
Cool guys, man. Those guys do a great show. We appreciate what they're doing. If you haven't checked out, you know, the Linux Action Show, please do, man. It's a good show.
All right, Link, I'm going to cut you
off. Yes, indeed.
So I can play us out.
Yep.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, man.
There's a little bit of a lag.
Big lag.
Good night. Happy 150 to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Salam alaikum. L'chaim.
I'll talk to you later, man. Lag. Dude, how bad is the lag with him?
Oh, there's like at least 5 seconds, I'd say.
Now, I noticed that the lag on Skype seemed, as the call went on, it seemed to get longer.
Wow. Not for now. We had a lot of people on tonight. On the RC, listening live.
So long, Link. Waiting, waiting. Screw it, he's gone. You know, it's odd because I've noticed with both Skype and SJ Phone, if I close the application by clicking the close box at the top, it kind of hangs.
Uh-huh.
But if I go to File, Close, it closes properly and closes right out. Weird. Just a shout out for one thing for all you Ultraman lovers out there. The
Ultraman,
here he comes from the sky. Actually, the Ultraman Volume 1, Disc 1, or actually Volume 1. Ultraman Series 1 Volume 1 was released this past week. It is a 3 DVD set with 20 episodes of Ultra 11. The original Ultraman that was aired in the United States back in the early 70s. Really, really, really great product. Fantastic packaging. It's just, you know, transfer is really great. It has the Japanese with English subtitles and English translation. Good stuff. Really good stuff. For 20-some bucks off of Amazon, like 23 I think I paid with shipping, it's a steal. Really good stuff if you're a big Ultraman fan. But thank you guys for listening. Pat, anything you want to say?
Not at all, man. See you next week, man. Episode 151. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, we're going to leave you with another Jonathan Colton song called Sky Mall. I haven't listened to it myself, but hey, let's hear how it sounds.
Oh, how is nice this time of year. I check my bags and find my seat and buy a beer and settle in. Such is my life here on the road. Now my seat back is up, tray table stowed, and there's nothing to do. I gotta get myself through.
up in the Sky Mall at Bye-Bye Ohio Mall. It always has just what I need. When I get to the gate and remember too late, I should have brought something to read. I'm okay, 'cause I know that I'm gonna shop at Sky Mall. Fake rock where I can hide my keys from everyone. And I imagine what all my friends would say to see this lovable Santa dance and sway to my favorite song, my favorite holiday song. And I am shopping in Sky Mall at Bye-Bye Ohio Mall. It always has just what I need. When I get to the gate and remember too late, I should have brought something to read. I'm okay, 'cause I know that I'm gonna shop at Sky Mall. In Cleveland, I bought a replica of the sword that was broken. And then somewhere above Detroit, some successories that say lead with vision.
Paint your fine ass. Yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.
It's over, baby. So, ladies and gentlemen, oh, it was a long show tonight. Long Shoreman show. Happy day. Thank you for listening. You have a good night. And God, Link bless everybody. I don't know.